about.
Three, two, one. Transmission.
If you don't mind, I will begin at the beginning.
It's a new day. Let's get going.
One, two, three.
Bad boy.
Four, five, six.
B.I.G.
When I eat hot Cheetos, I get crazy.
I just love hot Cheetos. I love you so much.
Kevin and Bean. Kevin and Bean. They're just a lot of fun. Kevin and Bean. Kevin and Bean. They've got the darkness on the run. Kevin and Bean. Kevin and Bean. They're just a lot of fun. St. Peter cried, we're in the mist. What are we gonna do? We called good old Kevin and Bean. They knew just what to do.
This thong gives me an ass rash, but the boys love it.
And now...
Kevin, you.
Our feature presentation.
By the way, I would just like to state for the record that we do have the darkness on the run.
Yes, we do.
That's accurate.
That is awesome, you guys.
Yes.
I know.
You're welcome.
It's kind of helpful, right?
Sure. Yeah.
We're going to take your calls in a moment here at 1-800-520-1067. Give us a call at that number and get on the air and get a prize. So, Kevin, you'll be interested in this. My wife's going to Africa next week.
Oh!
I know your favorite continent.
Love. Wanted to go my whole life. Finally went a couple years ago. It's the best thing in the world. Your wife, just your wife?
She's going with a friend.
A male friend?
A friend?
Well, not that that would matter, but in this case, so, it doesn't happen to be. No, it happens to be a woman.
All right.
But why would it matter?
Well, I'm just saying she's got to get it somewhere.
So she's going to Kenya, and we're talking about it yesterday, and, you know, she's taking the malaria pills. She's got all the, you know, all the preparations you have to do to go to Africa.
Right.
And somehow I started thinking, I started laughing. I thought, look, don't get me wrong. I don't want this to happen. But if you went to Kenya and got killed by a hippo, it would be the funniest thing ever, right? And she was, like, so offended by that. And that's the thing. Let me tell you about why women are no goddamn good. And, Mike, you've got my back on this. They don't hear the funny. They just hear the death. That's what they focus on. They're focusing on the negative part of that story, which is that she's dead.
I think maybe she relates to that part of the story because it involves her. Her physical being and her own death.
But what she's not thinking about is that for the rest of my life, I've got a story to tell. Oh, I'm sorry. I heard your wife pass. What happened? Well, she got killed by a hippo.
Run over by a hippo.
Every single time, it would be funny. I mean, tragic, sad. Sure. Don't want it to happen,
no,
but
you sound
hilarious.
Like it's, you would be it's tragic
just,
and sad.
Sound broken up.
He's right. I mean, like when you talk about like Hiroshima or Nagasaki, all you think about is the thousands of people that died there, but you really got to think about how many lives it saved. You know, and like that.
And how funny it
was. What's that got to do with
anything? I don't understand that reference at all.
Because if Bean's wife were to get trampled by a hippo, it would bring so much more joy to everybody that heard
it. It might
that
actually
story.
Save lives?
Yeah. You know?
So she'd be doing her part to help.
Yeah, no, I agree with Bean.
All right. Well,
I don't agree with you, though. How about that? I don't agree with anything you're saying. I'm just saying that the joy that I would get, albeit there's a dark side to the story, joy that I would get from being able to tell that story, to have that story. I mean, that's a party starter, that story. You're the guy who always has one thing that's awesome that you have to say to share with the world. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and then everybody listens, and then they all look at each other and go, wow, that's all right, I'm going to go home.
Yeah,
well, I mean,
exactly. That's how you get the party started.
Let me suggest party starter might not be the correct words.
May not be death of wife.
Right.
May not be party starter.
I don't know how she can be offended. She's married to you.
Yeah, she's got to.
She's got to have been hearing this stuff for as long as you guys have been married, this stuff that comes out of your mouth.
Praying to be killed by a hippo?
Yes.
I don't know.
Throw
Look,
herself in front of it.
But if you had your choice of a way to go, wouldn't you want a way to go that is awesome like that, though? I mean, that's so much better than, you know, getting shot or dying of kidney disease or something like that. I mean, you got killed by a hippo. That's awesome.
I guess, but how is that useful to you after you got killed by the hippo?
Yeah, not at all.
You know what I mean? It's not like you could tell the story.
Right, but the fact is you'd be leaving a gift. Let's face it. If I got killed by a hippo this weekend, and that's unlikely in Washington, let's face it. But if it happened, you guys would never stop laughing about it.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
I mean, 10 years from now, Kevin, you'd wake up in the morning laughing because you knew a guy who got killed by a hippo. It would never stop.
This one time I worked with a guy that got killed by a hippo. That would be pretty good. Although
that's all I'm saying. That's like, the only thing I'm saying.
You might be asking for a little much for your wife to enjoy that comedy.
From her husband.
Yeah. That's what I learned. So yeah. Now I'm rooting for the hippo. If that's where she's going to be.
All right. Time for your phone calls. 1-800-520-1067. You get on the air. You get a prize.
We're sorry. You must first dial a 0 or a 1.
What it do, nephew?
Well, tonight's the night. Our friend Nicole Alvarez is there as we take over Six Flags Magic Mountain. You can be one of the very first to ride the new ride, Terminator Salvation. That's what you get. So 1-800-520-1067. Why don't we start with our man Scott? He's on line one. Does not sound like he's off to a great Thursday.
Scott, hi.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Good.
What's going on? Yeah, so I got to get up today at 5 o'clock. I got a 2.5-hour bus ride ahead of me just to get to court. It starts at 8:30. And I got two open cases there, and I just figured out I got two warrants in the mail. So now that I'm showing up there, I'm on probation already. Pretty much they're just going to lock me up when I get there, I think.
You are not a smart guy.
Wow.
I don't even know where these ones came from. They just came in the mail.
That happens sometimes. They just show up for no reason.
You probably didn't even do anything, right? You didn't even earn those.
That's what I'm going to say.
What are all these cases for, Scott?
I got a prescription medication without a bottle. I got an unlawful use of 911. And
whoa. What happened with 911? What's your unlawful use?
Well, I was outside of my mom's house, and I'm not allowed in Lake Forest anymore, but I was outside.
My God. Here's what I like about Scott. Every sentence, there's about a whole nother hour of stories that go along with that.
Yes.
All right, so you're not allowed in Lake Forest.
So I was outside, and I was smoking a cigarette, and I had a couple drinks. And then a cop pulled up, and he knew my name, and he got out, and he roughed me up. So I went to my house, and I called 911 and told them that I want to talk to a sergeant. So they say, okay, we're sending him out. And I go out to meet the cop, and I'm waving my hands, and guess who shows up? The same cop.
That's funny. Yeah. Now, that's funny in the way that B was just talking about. That's humor.
Why did you call 911 instead of, it's obviously not an emergency. Why didn't you just call the non-emergency police number?
I don't know. I figured 911 is the best deal to go. You know, they pay.
Yeah, if it's an emergency.
I don't pay taxes, but you know,
I don't pay taxes. But if I did, that would be a good service for me to use. Exactly.
Scott, I'm gonna ask you a question, and I'm gonna require an honest answer from you. Okay.
All right.
We'd all be better off if they just locked you up, right? I mean, if they just kept you today, that would be better, probably for America, right?
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're not contributing a lot.
Two-hour bus ride, court, probably going to jail. That's your Thursday.
Yeah, that's my day.
All right.
If I don't get arrested, I'm going to see Terminator for sure.
He has a backup plan, people.
That's You're smarter than I thought you were, Scott. Well done. All right. Let us know how it turns out, dude. Thank you for the call.
That guy's my hero.
He does, you know, considering how many crappy things are going on, and I don't doubt he brought a lot of it on himself. He's got a pretty good attitude about it.
I guess so.
I would be a little bit more bummed out than Scott is. I wouldn't be making a backup plan to see Terminator.
Let's go to Frankie. Hi, Frankie.
Hey, how you guys doing? What it do, nephew?
What it do?
I just want to tell you guys, I was born in New York. I spent a lot of time in Jersey. Mm-hmm. And I'm moving back to Jersey. I don't know how you guys live here. I always used to make fun of Bean for living in Seattle. Now I know why he does. I cannot stand L.A. I cannot stand, like, people in Jersey and New York, they're rude, but you know they're rude when you meet them. People in L.A., they're like sharks. They want to take your soul away. 2 weeks ago, my car ran out of gas 3 blocks away from a gas station. I walked to the freaking gas station. The freaking guy behind the counter did not want to give me a canteen so I can go and fill up gas in my freaking car.
Oh, that guy is such a... Oh! Wow.
What is going on in this city? What is wrong with these people? Like, I don't... Can you please explain to me what L.A. does to people?
I don't know. I have an auto club.
Yeah.
They take care of that.
AAA, right.
I'm sorry,
right.
Lisa May. We can't all afford that.
You could afford, you know, some kind of a gas, you know.
Little canister. They don't give them to you because people take them.
Right.
Yeah.
I got to be honest with you. I know there are a lot of problems in every city, really.
Sure.
But this is mostly you.
Is it?
It is.
I honestly admit, maybe I'm so used to the East Coast, I just can't deal with
yeah.
it.
Well, and if
else.
You are the East Coast kind of guy, that rubs us the wrong way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess it does.
You going back to Jersey is probably the best thing for all of us.
We're oil and vinegar, baby.
Yeah.
No doubt.
All right.
Good luck.
Enjoy that trip.
I'm going to miss you guys, though. I'll see you guys on the internet.
All right.
Thanks, Frankie.
Thank you.
Bye now. All right, so two calls, and we've sent both of them away so far today, right? One to jail, one to New Jersey.
This is the kind of person that you can advertise to if you advertise on the Kevin and Bean Show.
There's going to be nobody left at the end of the program if we keep taking calls. But let's try one more because Eric is calling about the big sports story of the night.
Yeah, Eric.
On line 8. Yeah, Eric.
What it do, nephew?
What it do?
Hello, Eric.
Hello, Lisa. Oh, my gosh, Kevin. How do the Cavaliers lose at home when they've had all that time off? Where's all the time off? The reason why they lost at home.
Yeah, I didn't see the game last night, but I'm excited to hear that. And I think it's a double-edged sword time off. You can lose your momentum as well and play rusty.
Yeah, I think that's what happened. And it's just, they're up by 15 at half. LeBron was all time. Mo Williams hit the unbelievable half-court shot. In the second period.
Do you think somebody from the NBA and somebody from the networks are all over there, you know, on Orlando's side going, dude, seriously, nobody wants to see you in the finals?
Yeah, I know. And if it's Magic win this, you know, where the Rays are going to be and Kobe will get his championship.
Yeah, that's true.
So
yeah.
It'll be by default.
Cleveland was up by 16 at one point,
and
they let it slip away. You know, I think LeBron had 40. He did his part.
I think LeBron had 49.
Oh, is that what it was? 49, yeah.
Yeah, 49, but, I mean, yep.
It was close. I mean, they were leading how far out? 15 seconds out? Cleveland was still ahead, Mike?
Yeah.
Something like that?
Yeah, it was
a close game.
A one-point game back and forth down to the wire, but the thing is, Orlando lives and dies by the three-point shot. And in the first half, they weren't hitting three-point shots. And then they just started to find their groove. And they're pretty tough to beat when they're, you know, shooting 70% from three-point range.
Right. There's a reason they made it to the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yeah.
They're pretty good. Yep. All right, dude. Thank you for the call.
All right.
I'd like to ask Eric to move back east, too, if that's possible. Is that all right?
What did he do? We don't even know, right?
Just nothing. Just I didn't like his tone. All right, let's talk about today's Kevin and Bean Show, shall we?
All right.
It is Thursday, and it's the 21st of May I See Them.
I'm going to have big worms when I grow up.
Oh, good for you.
We have many stories to tell you about today. I don't know if you heard about the kid in Fresno that made his little brother, I think the kid was 2, get a tattoo.
A 2-year-old?
Well, not really 2 years. A little bit.
Well, I thought it was parents and a 7-year-old is the story.
Could
I
be.
Heard.
Could be.
Okay. Either way.
Could be.
Not
shaky.
An older brother and a 2.
Shaky on that one. We have LaQuisha on today's Kevin and Bean Show talking about the Cougar.
Yeah. Okay.
We have Michael Franzese, I believe is how you say his name. Ask a mob boss.
Ooh. Yeah, what about that?
This is one of the guys that was the highest up in one of the 5 main, you know, mafia families in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And he's written a couple of books. His last one, by the way, I don't know if you saw it, Bean, is it's about business. It's
oh,
about
really?
Things you can learn from the mob on how to run a successful straight business.
I didn't think a lot of ex-mobsters went on publicity tours. I thought they stayed pretty low-key because of the stuff they've done and the stuff they know.
And they're not supposed to talk.
Yeah.
And I read part of this book, and he made a reference to how did I get out of the mafia and still stay alive?
Mm-hmm.
Great question.
I mentioned that in an earlier book, which I haven't read, so we'll have to ask him that today. And any other questions you might have for him? He seems like he's willing to talk about the truth.
Interesting.
Which is odd.
And what kind of deal did he cut to stay out of jail? Because if you're a mob boss, clearly you are, you know, you're involved in a lot of criminal activity. So what, I mean, did he turn on some of the other people in the family?
Time. He didn't stay out of jail.
Oh, okay.
A lot of people turned on him, apparently, is what happened.
Oh, wow. That should be fascinating. That sounds like a great 8 o'clock hour.
And we're going to talk to the director of Terminator Salvation, McGee.
How about that?
Sweet.
How about that? So that's pretty cool. We'll take a quick break and come back with Ralph Showbiz Bean.
You are listening to the Kevin and Bean Show, and once again today, wow, Paparazzi, you're here early.
Yeah, well, you know, celebrities in the crowd.
Once again today, we have tickets for Green Day. That is June 4th at the Fonda. When you hear the band singing any song here on the Kevin and Bean Show, just pick up the phone, 1-800-520-1067, and be caller 20. Hey, Ralph Garman.
Bull!
What?
Oh! Mother! What?
Wow!
What are you talking about?
Bull!
Mother!
What?
Why?
What's the topic?
American Idol.
Ah.
That was a shocker.
Should be happy it's over, though, because you need it now.
I'm so happy it's over.
I was right.
About quitting?
Yes. Because the final ends up Chris Allen as the new American Idol.
Yeah.
Chris Allen.
Is that the gay guy that everybody thought was
going
to win? No, it's the other guy.
The guy with less talent. The guy who's not as good.
Yeah.
Really?
The worst of the two.
Yeah.
The one who didn't deserve it. The one who's not the best. That's who won. That's how good this show is. Not only is the show bad, but now they're just BS on every level.
Now,
total bull.
Now, you didn't watch last night.
No, I did
not. You saw the results.
Which makes me even happier.
Yes.
Because had I watched, with all that buildup for the rightful guy not to win, would have been... don't get me started.
But it's just, Ralph, it's exact. I mean, because it's a voting show, it's just like politics. You've got factions, you've got one, you know, Danny Gokey drops out, his constituents have to go somewhere. Chris Allen was more like Danny Gokey, so he likely picked up more of those than Adam Lambert did. I mean, and Chris Allen peaked at the right time. I mean, he definitely has been coming on strong the last couple of weeks.
Well, that's bull.
Oh, God, I'm bored already.
I preferred Gay Adam as well, but at least I can understand why Chris Allen won.
Because it's bull.
Oh, God, I'm so bored.
They all get their contracts.
Yeah, that's true.
And they all get a big bag of cocaine at the end. That's all that matters.
Yeah.
But the good news is there's not 7 hours of Idol per week.
That's true.
Everyone's going to be talking about now for a while.
Seacrest won't be on my TV until January.
True.
I almost emailed Ralph last night, but I know that he automatically sends mine to the trash to tell him, look, I know you hate the Idol, but when I tell you that Bikini Girl is back in a smaller bikini and with breast implants since the last time she was on, it might be worth tuning in. I feel like I should give you the heads up.
I can see a lot of boobs, a lot of other sources other than sitting through American Idol to see a girl in a bikini.
I like that she upgraded between her last appearance and now.
I read this morning, Seacrest said, I'd ask you what's new, but I can see what's new.
Wow.
Mother.
So you're saying
tell me about it.
Bull. That's what I'm saying.
So you're saying you're happy with the outcome.
Yeah, it's okay.
Right.
I love more and more what's coming out about this Kate Gosselin broad. This from John and K plus 8. The shrew has been yelling at her mouse of a husband for years now in this TV series.
Yeah.
For those of you who don't know, it's a reality show about a couple that's got 8 kids. This is pre-Octomom. They were the original 8 kid raisers. And if you ever watched it, she's just a nightmare. She's a horrible.
She's not nice.
She's hideous.
To anyone.
Well, Us Weekly Magazine is ready to launch a scathing story, according to insiders, about Kate Gosselin. Such stories as she fired 40 nurses and aides in just 3 months when they first had the kids.
Wow.
40?
40. She went through 40 of them.
How's that even possible?
Apparently, the pastor from their neighborhood, mm-hmm. they're in their congregation, donated 6 baby beds to the children when she first brought them home, but Kate sent them back because they didn't match.
Are you kidding?
Yeah.
Ooh.
She's very much into making money, according to sources, and didn't even cut her speaking engagements short after making the statement that she might leave her husband because of all this brouhaha about their respective rumors of them cheating. So,
because you don't get paid if you don't show up, right?
Exactly.
That's what she cares about.
Exactly.
Wow.
I love it. I want to see her. I want to see her vilified. See her pilloried. Are they still pillory people?
I don't even know what it means, but I'm guessing.
They should pillory people. Put them in the pillory. Where they belong. Mother. Pink has a great sense of humor.
Ooh.
She named her dog... Er.
What? She did?
Yes. Effer. Let's call him Effer.
That's awesome.
So she would go out in public, and the dog would run in the park, and she'd have to scream after him.
Oh, God.
Effer! Effer! Effer!
She probably figured she was just shouting that anyway out of frustration. She might as well just name it that.
Well, apparently her dog, her dad rather, put an end to it.
Really?
Yeah. He said it was unacceptable. It was disgraceful. And he used to pet sit a lot, so he got tired of yelling effer in the park when he was going after his dog. So he renamed the dog Fred.
Fred.
Oh. Yeah. But Pink says Fred is much happier now, but still responds to his former name. If you shout it out loud, he'll come running. So.
Okay, explain the Pink.
Let's all explain the Pink, shall we? I couldn't be more excited. King Kong's coming back to Universal.
What?
King Kong's balls?
Yeah!
I knew it. I knew he was going to come with that immediately when you said that.
Do you remember the King Kong ride at the park in the tour? Yeah. Universal?
Yep.
Yeah.
With his banana breath?
Yes.
Yeah. Love that.
That was.
And there was like a fire or something took it out, right?
Well, that's the thing. They had a big fire on the back lot, and it destroyed that soundstage that had that ride inside of it. That hangar.
Yeah.
But they are rebuilding it. Grand opening next summer, they tell us. Next summer, King Kong will be back. Okay. No one can destroy the great ape, says a publicist for Universal Studios. Well, okay. Actually, a fire could. A fire could destroy
fire
the great
did.
Ape.
Yeah,
actually.
Hey,
I always thought that was the lamest of all.
Dude! Oh! Giant ape would pull on the bridge and your car would come rocking towards it and everything. Yeah.
But
awesome.
it was super lame. Like it was just lame.
Lamer than
backdraft.
Big hey, it's a flame.
I was wondering if Kevin there's another flame. Cries at the King Kong exhibit like he did at the movie.
I do not.
The monkey died. This one will be based, by the way, on the new look, King Kong with Jack Black and Naomi Watts, as opposed to the old one that this
much better.
Based on. So Kevin will cry. I like a bitch. That's what he'll do.
Ralph, you're with me that the old movie is only about 1,000 times better than either of the remakes, right?
I don't know. I'm a big Jessica Lange fan. Jeff Bridges and Charles Grodin. That's a funny version.
And there's a hot scene in that one where Jessica Lange's wet.
Yeah, and the monkey pulls down her top.
Pulls her up, grabs her to pull, and you see boobs.
Yeah.
It's way hot.
I am so bored.
Oh, you're bored by Jessica Lange's hot cans, Kevin?
Talk of which movie was better in
which
the
King
30s
Kong
or 50s?
We're talking about King Kong. What would you have us talk about, Kevin?
30s or 50s.
We can't talk now about stories that relate to the stories?
I was so bored.
I think Kevin was playing poker last night. He seemed a little tired and cranky. I think somebody needs a nap and a banky.
That I could use.
Yeah. Take a look at today's celebrity birthday, shall we? Richard Hatch of the original Battlestar Galactica. He was Apollo in the original one, and then he came back as a bad guy in the remake. 64 years old today.
And then he won Survivor, remember? And then he went to jail.
Gilligan. I mean,
had a lot going on.
Mr. T is 57 years old today. Judge Reinhold, the actor, is 52. Firuza Balk. What happened to her career? She was busy for a while. She did a lot of work. She was in The Waterboy, and she was in The Craft.
Oh, yeah.
Remember her? Good-looking broad. Big mole on her face. Yeah. Those rarely go together, by the way. Good-looking broad, big mole on her face. Don't hear that in a sentence very often.
Never.
She's 35 years old today. And Lisa Edelstein from House.
Yeah.
Plays Cuddy on that show. Very, very sexy broad. She is 41 years old. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
By the way, a 7-year-old rocking the know in Fresno being forced to get a gang tattoo. What's that all about? We'll find out in about 15 minutes or so. First, though, you can email any of us anytime on any topic. We ignore most of them, but every once in a while we write back, and even less frequently we read them on the radio, like this one. Hey, guys, this is an anonymous email, by the way. I tried calling on your phone topic yesterday, but I got a busy signal about the worst place you've ever had sex. Well, I was in the Huntington State Beach handicapped bathroom stalls. It was terrible. I got sand in my areas. I'm a girl. And someone came knocking it to use it because they were in a wheelchair when we were halfway through.
Busy.
Talk about dampening the mood, though. You've got a chick in a wheelchair banging on the stall outside waiting for you to finish up so she can get in there.
And that's the only one she can use, obviously.
Exactly, yeah. Anyway, thought you'd like to hear about that, so top that. Cannot. I'm sorry.
Brian writes, chalk up Jessica Biel as another one of those hot girls who complains that being so hot makes their lives more difficult.
I've never heard her say that.
She doesn't strike me. She strikes me as a person with a pretty good sense of humor, pretty good grasp on reality. But it's especially funny how she complains that she's too hot for roles that have gone to Scarlett Johansson and Natalie Portman. And then he attached the article, and she does say, you know, sometimes it's, you know, is being too good looking really a problem for an actress? Yeah, it's really a problem. I have to be blunt.
Okay. I'm going to say, as much as I understand why that would rub people the wrong way, because let's face it, if that's your problem, that you're too good looking, then we don't really feel sorry for you. Obviously, there are a lot of roles that you can't be distractingly beautiful before. I mean, that does limit the amount of jobs you can get as an actress. Wouldn't you say, Lisa?
I don't know, but I know that you can look as good or as bad as they want you to on screen.
Right.
You know, with makeup and lighting and stuff, so I don't think it should be an issue. I don't know that she's a great actress. Like, Natalie Portman's a great actress.
She's a great actress. And I would be willing to guess that the role she's lost to Natalie Portman is because Natalie Portman is a great actress.
Yes.
It doesn't explain Scarlett Johansson, though, because she's a terrible actress.
She is a terrible actress.
And she's hot. And she's hotter than Jessica Biel.
Exactly.
So Jessica,
no,
I think
how
Jessica's fallen apart. On this.
Yeah, remember this clip from the TV show?
Like, I'm such a sweet girl, like, and I'm such a good catch. And like, people think, like, I'm surfacey or whatever, but I think when it comes down to it, just, like, the truth is that, like, yeah, you know, people are mean to me, you know, sometimes when, because of the way I look, you know, and I mean, it sounds like so stupid, but like people hate me because I'm beautiful, you know, like, and that is, sounds so horrible, you know, but like, that is like a real thing,
it's
a curse as much as it is a blessing to be pretty. I mean, like, no matter what, like, there is a huge, like, prejudice and racism, and when it comes down to it, like, that's why, you know, this didn't work out, you know, just because, like, if I would have just been a little uglier and a little less noticeable, it's just, you know, really sad.
Yeah. That is rough. She's got a point.
She's smart and pretty.
Face full of acid is what we say to her.
Yes.
I used to come home and cry in high school and say, Mom, I don't want to be pretty anymore. And she'd be like, you stop it. Heavy is the head that wears the crown.
Well, that's true. Yeah. All right, I don't have time to read this entire email from Chris, but you guys are going to love this. I've been listening to you guys since I discovered the podcast when I was on iTunes. I am your other black listener, and I also am one of your few listeners in Istanbul, Turkey.
Wow.
I was looking for radio shows to listen to because I'm an English teacher in an immersion course, and I spend all day speaking to people who don't speak English very well, so I thought in my free time I should listen to some people speaking English naturally. By the time I had heard enough episodes to realize how bad Kevin is, it was too late, but I was already hooked. All right, here's the point of a story, though. A few months ago, you guys were talking about the song Stayin' Alive by the Bee Gees and how it was a good song to think about while doing CPR. I thought it was funny at the time, but it reminded me that I had not done any CPR refresher courses since learning in my high school. That was 20 years ago. So I looked online and found out how many compressions, how many breaths, etc. Fast forward to yesterday, and the story below is what I posted to my friends and family about an hour or so after it happened. And it's a very long, detailed story that involved her running around a pond in Istanbul, and somebody had drowned. Somebody had been pulled out of the lake, and she was the only person of a group of, she said, about 100 people that were in the park who had any idea how to do CPR. And she had just kind of refreshed her memory online by looking at that stuff as a result of our conversation. And she totally did Stayin' Alive the whole time. It took 15 minutes to bring the kid back.
Well, you can tell by the way I use my walk.
Wow.
That's bizarre.
That's impressive, though.
So it's crazy. She says, you guys do a lot of stupid stuff on the radio, and it's hilarious, but I want you to thank you for helping me save the life of my new friend, Ahmet, your Istanbul listener, Chris.
Listen,
isn't that wild?
It's really pretty much a daily thing that people's lives get saved because of our show. That happens a lot, so... Dear Kevin and Bean, my name is Justine. I listen to your show every day, to and from school. My sister and I both enjoy your senseless chatter and the music.
Which I think about right.
That's a great compliment. And then she goes on to tell us that she wants us to play a new band called The Anytime. They're big in the Midwest. She's in love with the drummer. Oh, wait, no, they're in love. And if we play the band, then they'll make some money, and then he can tour, and then they can be together.
Oh, no.
So that's how that request went. Do it in the name of love, Justine says.
Wow.
I feel like they're going to make it. I think those two kids are going to make it. And finally, hey, guys, I know every so often you bring up weird names, so I thought I'd share this one with you. I work for an insurance company, and I had a person call us to ask us to add their daughter to their insurance policy. They said the daughter's name was LaDasha. So I said, how do you spell that? No joke. The name is spelled letter L, letter A, dash, letter A.
Oh,
so not the A-S-H, just the dash?
Nope, a dash. It's L-A-A. This is not a joke. It was also on a DMV record. I couldn't wait to call and tell you guys about it.
That is the best name ever.
Isn't that crazy?
Wow, I like that. And finally, dear Kevin and Bean, ha ha ha, I normally always listen to you guys, but I missed it when you talked to Spencer and Heidi.
Oh, yeah.
I don't watch the show, but I always thought he looked like a douchebag, and apparently listened to the podcast and heard it just a day or two ago, and was very happy with how bad Spencer sounded in our performance.
You were trying to catch his pig flu and bring it over to your radio.
You know what? That'd be kind of sweet, because I bet Heidi'd lose some more weight if she got the swine flu. That'd be hot, right, kid?
And he said, just keep mentioning my name. You guys are doing good.
Yeah.
our Spencer that Omar does such a great job.
Hey.
He's so much funnier than the real Spencer. Guys, how young is too young to get a tattoo, in your opinion? I know the law says 18, but let's set that aside for a second. How old do you think you ought to be before you're able to get a tattoo?
But doesn't the law say 18 unless your parents give you permission? So you could do it earlier?
Yeah, I think that's true.
Oh.
I think you're right.
I'd say 1 year, probably too young. 1 year old.
Yeah.
Because your skin still has a lot of growing to do, maybe. Yeah.
And you don't really know what's going on.
There's a story out of Fresno. A 26-year-old Fresno man is in jail for allegedly forcing his 7-year-old son to get a gang tattoo.
Oh, no.
So the 7-year-old.
That's just the reporter, though, putting his own spin on the story, forcing. What if the kid was into it?
Yeah, but it's.
All right. How about later in the story where it says, according to police, the dad held the boy while another man, a friend of his, gave him the tattoo. Aww, what about that part?
That's mean.
Well, we wanted to find out more about this improbable story in Fresno, so we asked producer Alex to line up the man in question, and I believe we've got him on the phone, but his name was not released, not here in the article, so I don't even know who we're talking to. Hey, Kevin and Bean Show here. Who's this?
What's up?
Who is this?
Hello.
What's up? It's Rudy.
Rudy?
What's this?
You're
Rudy. Oh, is it? Hey, what's up? Is this Kevin and Bean?
Yeah.
Hey, what's up, fool?
Our Rudy?
Yeah, what's up?
Rudy Cisneros?
Yeah, why are you calling all early? I didn't know I was going to call you or nothing today.
Well, what are you doing in Fresno, first of all?
Oh, like one of my baby's mamas is up here, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, so I just like every like couple years I make the rounds, you know? I go up and down the stage.
Sure.
You know, like, you know, check out all my kids and stuff. The ones I know about, at least.
How many kids do you have, do you know?
I don't, dog, like, the ones that I, like, I admit to,
mm-hmm.
I don't know, man, like, 7, I guess.
Okay.
Wow.
7
kids. So, like, one of the, like, dopest ones out of all of them is up here in Fresno, so, like, I figured I'd come up here and hang out for a while, you know, hang out. I got a couple homeboys up here, too, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Okay, but please tell me that you're not the guy in the story who had your, you know, held the kid down while your friend gave him a gang tattoo.
You guys heard about that, eh?
Yes. Yeah, it's in all the papers.
Oh, it looks dope. You should see this tattoo. It looks dope, eh?
It's a, according to the story, it's a dog's paw, and it's,
right.
It's on the child's right hip.
That's right. Bow, wow, wow, puto.
Why a dog's paw, Rudy?
Oh, is this like up here, like in Central California? That's like one of the down-ass clicas. That's one of the bad gangs, you know? So I got to, like, represent, you know? It's like I didn't have no, like, father around, you know, to teach me about stuff, about life.
Right.
You know, about, like, and, like, when I was little, I had to learn stuff for myself. So I feel like I'm going to do my part to, like, introduce my kid to, like, all the stuff that's important to being a man, you know? And I'm going to start early, you know, because, like, I was, like, I saw these, like, güeros out there, like, these white boys like you, and they had their kids out. They were, like, golfing.
Right.
And, like, doing Cub Scouts and stuff like that when they were little kids. And I was, like, I should do the same thing, you know, like introduce him to hustle, to the life, you know, like when he's little.
A lot of people don't want their kids to go into that life.
Yeah.
It's all I know, though, you know what I'm saying? I figured, like, if he's going to do it, he should be good at it, you know?
But
it's
so,
not like the tattoo's not all. I mean, I didn't just stop there, you know, that's why I've been up here a couple of days now, you know, like trying to really mold this kid into like a real GA.
I think this is from the Bulldog Street Gang. What else do they have besides the tattoo?
Well, like, you know, I shaved his head.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? I got him some white beaters, you know, some denim swim trunks.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I taught him how to hotwire a car.
He's,
I taught him how to get 2 Dodger blankets when you go in there. He told me I have a handicapped kid at home and he needs one. Taught him how to use jumper cables.
But
I taught him how to hold a cockfight.
Okay.
I taught him how to, like, how to finagle stuff at the swap meet. You get a better price.
Most of that is not information that a 7-year-old ought to be exposed to.
Taught him how to make mango juice.
What?
I taught him how to convince a hyena it's not yours.
Oh, but he's only 7, Rudy.
Yeah, but like he needs to know. I taught him what states don't have child support laws. You know what I'm saying?
Wow.
Oh my God.
I taught him how to use sign language when he's at a DUI checkpoint so the cop thinks you're deaf.
Wow. So all the important things.
Taught him how to pull his socks up.
Rudy,
taught him how to put a balloon in his ass.
Okay, listen. You
can't. Like, you gotta hide that stuff.
Right, but here, listen to me. Listen to me, Rudy. I'm being very serious about this. You can't mold a kid by making one appearance for a couple of days every year. The boy needs a father around.
Well, that's why I'm here for a couple of days.
Right.
I'm a father, and I'm around.
Right, but only for a couple of days. That doesn't seem like that's going to help much.
I taught him what dealerships let you buy a car with no credit, Universal okay. City Nissan.
All right.
I taught him, I'm preparing him for jail, so I took the seat off his bicycle.
Come on. Oh, what man. Is wrong with you?
You got to get ready.
That's terrible.
That's horrible.
All right. Good luck with the boy then, Rudy.
All
right.
You guys have a good day.
We will now.
You are listening to The Kevin and Bean Show, and tomorrow on the program, our old friend Adam Carolla stops back by. We're going to try again with actress Moon Bloodgood from the Terminator movie, who wouldn't pick up the phone when we called her earlier in the week.
Can you blame her?
Also, no. Our friend Stryker is hosting Charm School on VH1. We've got him, and Ralph, you'll be very excited. Danielle Fishel tomorrow.
Oh, finally.
I know you love her from what, Boy Meets World? Is that her show?
Boy Meets World, sure. I grew up watching her on Boy Meets World, but more importantly, she's got The Soup. No, what's her show?
Oh, the fashion
the
suit.
Dish.
That one?
The dish.
That's it. Over on Style Network. Yeah, and she's very funny on that show.
Yeah, well, she'll be here.
And she has massive cash.
I was going to say, more importantly than any of that.
I'm getting to it.
She'll be bringing them. That'll be tomorrow morning.
You know, Bean likes to wait for the pauses in the show. He likes to give you that room to breathe. That's what he likes.
Giant size cans.
That's what I'm saying.
Here's Ralph with the Showbiz Beat.
Last night, American Idol. Now, I'm sorry I didn't watch now. Now, I'm sorry I got off the train.
Oh, I'm so happy it's
I
over.
Didn't realize that they were going to have Lionel Richie stopping by. Had I known, I would have tuned in to see a duet between Danny Gokey and Lionel Richie. Or then maybe I could have stuck around for Fergie singing with the top 13. Or maybe the Keith Urban, Chris Allen duet would have done it for me.
Wow, American Idol
blows. Or maybe Jason Mraz stopping by or Queen Latifah singing with Little Rounds would have put me over the top. Maybe Carlos Santana doing Smooth with Matt Gerard. Are you effing kidding me?
Ralph, I gotta tell you, this doesn't sound any worse than every show you watched. And you would come in after the show and you would go, they had this person and this person. I'd go, why do you watch? It's the same.
No, it's not the same, man.
It's gotten worse, you
it's
think?
It's gotten worse. It's absolutely gotten worse.
Hmm. Not possible.
But Kiss was on. I would like to have seen Kiss.
Yeah.
Kiss was awesome.
Gene Simmons was on.
They had, I guess they had Adam singing Beth, and then Ladies and Gentlemen, Kiss. They came out and did some of Detroit Rock City, and then right into Rock and Roll All Night. That was the big threefer with Kiss.
Steve Martin stopped by to play some banjo.
He did?
Really?
Apparently they asked Steve who he thought would win at the end of the evening, and he said, I know it's a long shot, but I'm hoping me. So there was one apparently brief moment of entertainment in that show.
But that was it.
That was it. Steve Martin talking to people. Then Chris Allen won, which is total bullshit.
So
I'm saying that.
Yeah. No one expected that, right?
Adam Lambert was
no.
the one.
Yeah, okay.
He was the man.
Although Harvey Levin was one of several people yesterday who were predicting it. He was all day long. Harvey was saying Chris Allen's going to win it.
I wonder how he knew that.
He knows too much. That guy worries me just a
plugged
bit.
Plugged in, isn't he?
Yeah, too much.
Chris Pine, the new Captain Kirk from Star Trek, is disclosing details about his life. According to Star Magazine, he loves skeet shooting.
Skeet.
The second skeet shooting story we've had this week, by the way. First Shia LaBeouf and now Chris Pine.
That's where they just throw those little round clay pigeons in the air and shoot them out with
They're
a shotgun?
Little clay discs that they launch on this spring-loaded machine, and they fly like a frisbee out in front of you, and you shoot them with a shotgun. Blast
Is skeet
the hell out
shooting
of them.
The new black?
It could be. Maybe black shooting's the new black.
Oh, wow.
I hope not.
I'm just saying.
Would you like to take that back? Would you like to take that back? Tell me, would you take that back?
Chris Pine says he doesn't want anyone to think he's a psycho because of it. All right, we won't. Did you know Chris Pine's dad is Robert Pine?
No.
The lead officer on Chips?
What?
Remember their boss on Chips?
No way.
Robert Pine?
Yeah.
Not at
the
all.
The lieutenant on Chips. You don't remember the guy who was the boss on Chips?
No. He's kind of male pattern baldness,
yes.
Tall guy.
Ponch and John's boss on Chips.
I'm not arguing with you. I just
well,
don't remember the guy.
Know it.
Okay. That's his dad. That's amazing,
Actor
Ralph.
Robert Pine is Chris Pine's dad. How great is that?
I guess it's great.
Dude, it's way great.
I really
way
can't great. Measure my enthusiasm.
That's way
if
amazing.
You can't get excited about some Chips news, then screw you. Looks like this Footloose remake's going to get worse before it gets better.
Oh, good.
Chase Crawford of TV's Gossip Girl and his own private detective agency has been signed to play the lead, the Kevin Bacon part. Guess who it looks like is going to be the female lead? played by Laurie Singer in the original.
Robert
Pine. The poor man's Daryl Hannah, as I like to call her.
I don't know. I hope it's Audrina Patridge.
No, I wish. That would actually be interesting. Miley Cyrus, apparently,
passed
as the female lead in.
All right. I'm out.
Yeah. Hmm. Boy, that gives me a cramp right down there in my ankle.
What did you say is the biggest song that came out of that movie, Ralph?
Probably Let's Hear It for the Boy.
PGC, I still love that song. From Niecy. Almost sprained myself right down there in the ankle every time I hear it. You might say it almost made my foot loose.
That's our own bean is Flash Phillips.
Yep.
That's pretty goddamn impressive.
He had 3 minutes of a song, and that's what he came up with, by the way, at the end. That's what he crafted.
You know what? I'll say, my ankle. I'll say a pain in my ankle.
In my defense, I played that song 1,000 times, so there may have been better.
Whose fault was that? Don't blame us.
I'm just saying.
That you're playing Niecy 1,000 times. Would you like to take that back? Today's celebrity birthdays, Richard Hatch from Battlestar Galactica, both versions, 64 years old today. Mr. T.
Pity the fool, it's 57.
Remember when Mr. T came in and we all wanted to vote him our president?
He was the sweetest man on the planet.
The best. That was weird.
Love me some tea. Lisa Edelstein from House.
Yeah. Is she a slave woman?
What? No, she's Dr. Cuddy on that show. She's 41 years old.
It was not
today.
Me.
An actress, Farusa Balk from The Waterboy and other feature films, turns 35. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the show.
Tonight at midnight, how about Terminator Salvation? A preview of what you'll be seeing when you go to the midnight showing tonight with the director of the film, Mick G, joins us later on this hour. Ralph, you want to introduce your new friend Emily to us?
Hey, this is on you guys. This isn't on me. I didn't book this jobby.
All right, Ralph, tell us what it is that upset you, and then we'll introduce her.
I don't like people using the phrase "I know," right? Because it is douche speak. It is the things that people say when they have nothing to say. It's people just filling the air with conversation when they have nothing to offer. That's the kind of phrase that they use when they say "I know," right? When you say something and it's obvious and plain for everyone to see, and there's really no need for them to agree, but they feel that they have to say, "Wow, it's really hot out today." I know, right? Yeah, no, I don't need you to qualify that. It just is. That's what it's.
No,
hot.
It just means I was thinking the same thing.
Well,
that's
then
all.
Add that. Add something. I was thinking the same thing. Or boy, I hope this weather changes soon. Or it's killing my tomatoes. I don't know. Whatever you guys want to add to the conversation, add it. But don't just hit me with "I know," right?
Unless it's killing your tomatoes, don't add that.
No, I'd like to.
So,
all right.
Do you have trouble with all kind of affirmations? I mean, if somebody says "yep," is that bug you too?
No.
If somebody says
"no," that's fine. A yes, a simple yes will suffice, rather than "I know," right? Which makes it sound like you're saying something, but you're not.
Yeah, it does make it sound like you said the original, which you didn't.
Right.
Yeah, that's true.
Because you can't really be asking the other person if they're right when you're basically just quoting back what they're saying.
Okay, and agreeing with it.
Yeah.
So having said all that, let's find out how Emily fits into this. She's Kevin B. Lister on the phone with us right now. Let's find out how she fits into this whole conversation. Hey, Em.
Hi.
So you're going to get a tattoo.
What's your tattoo going to say?
Well, it's not just me, just to clarify. It's me and four of my girlfriends.
Okay, so,
five of you.
Five of you are going to get a tattoo that says?
Just the initials, IKR.
IKR, and that stands for?
I know, right?
So you're getting a tattoo of something that makes even less sense than the words "I know," right, that at least are understandable.
Well, to be honest with you, it really started as a joke.
Yeah.
And we've been trying to think of something that all of us would get for a really long time, and we couldn't think of anything.
Right. And how do you go, "This is it. We found what we're looking for."
Finally, the three letters IKR.
No, because it was just completely ridiculous.
Right.
Uh-huh. And still is.
See how ridiculous this phrase actually is, that it's way overused and all of that.
So you agree with Ralph in his hatred of "I know," right?
No, yeah, no, I do, completely. And we all just joked about it for so long, but I don't know if Ralph agrees that it's kind of contagious if someone says it.
Oh, it's contagious, yeah. It catches on.
Yeah, so is AIDS.
Like the swine flu.
No, but and so is "you know." But, I mean, that's a thing that a lot of people say. It's a crutch a lot of people use, but you wouldn't get that tattooed on your body.
Well,
but, Emily, let me ask you a question, because everybody that gets tattoos, the first question that people ask them when they meet them is, "What does the tattoo?" You're going to go, you know that?
Yeah, you're going to answer that.
When you say, "I know," right? And then the first word starts with "I." You're going to have to explain that for the rest of your life.
Not really. It's it's going to be like, hey, what does that mean? And I'm be like, I know, right? Or something like that.
Yes.
That so you have a built-in comedy joke on your body.
Exactly.
Ah, nice.
I'm changing my mind. I think it's a good idea now.
I don't think that Emily is really going to get this tattoo. I think she thought it would be funny to annoy Ralph by making it sound like she was going to, though.
No, not at all.
Nope.
Not at all.
This was planned before you heard my rant on this, right?
No, my roommate is sitting right next to me.
Right.
There's another person that's also getting the tattoo.
Okay.
Along with the three other people.
Okay, so you came to this separately from us complaining about it.
Yeah.
Okay. So
why don't you get something less offensive like KKK?
Oh, how dare you! You can't. Why would you put no on your? Why? I don't even understand that.
I don't think you're getting the point.
Oh,
where are you going to put it? Where's the tattoo going to go?
Forehead.
Yes. Actually, I'm going to get it right underneath my eye.
Yes.
Nice. With a teardrop on the other one, on the other side.
Yeah, I don't think they've thought this through, to be honest.
Yeah, they haven't. Clearly, they haven't. Clearly, they don't have any idea what they're talking about. Have you checked this with an adult or a sane person?
No. Seeing as the fact that I'm 13. And
oh, excellent.
Mentally insane, I have really no idea.
You're not going to tell your parents about it, though, right? I mean, you're just going to go.
Absolutely not.
She's not really 13.
Get it done from a friend.
Yeah, nothing about Emily makes sense.
I know, right?
When are you getting it done? When's it going to happen?
What?
When's it going to happen?
Well, pretty much the next couple weeks.
Okay. All right, we need some pictures.
You can slander them all over your website?
Maybe. Easy there, attitude girl. You're the one that's getting silly tattoo, not us.
That's right.
Yelling at us for. We're not getting a tattoo.
If people want to make fun of it, it's on you.
Just send us a picture. That's
I'm going to get an asinine tattoo, but don't you make fun of it. That's what she's saying to us.
Not at all.
All right.
All right.
You go ahead.
Send us a picture then.
All right. You struggle, right, though. You understand. You know that you are weak sauce, right, Em?
I know, right?
By the way, LaQuisha's on the phone. Apparently, another episode of The Cougar aired on TV Land, and we didn't see it.
Oh,
what are you guys doing not watching The Cougar?
Listen, there's too much TV to watch. The fact that you're watching it and recapping it makes me happy. That way
it's
I don't have
because
to.
Because she's 40 years old, isn't it? That you don't like old girls.
No, it's just I can't watch everything. This is TV Land, for God's sakes.
Well, they got it down to four. The final four young 20-something boys vying for the true love of the Cougar, who's 40 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And in this episode, the Cougar has to meet all of the families of the final four. And first up is Travis. Now, he's 21 years old. And his mother is not too pleased that he is dating a woman who is approximately the same age that she is.
Well, the first glimpse I got of her, I just saw her tall boots and her hair and just thought, oh, stay away from my son. I can't even look. It's too painful.
Yeah, this woman's not pleased about the situation at all.
Yeah.
But at least she starts to grow on her. I think the Cougar starts to grow on her and she does get more accepting.
Well, it's funny because when I heard your age, oh, it's like Travis 21. I can't see it, but...
Just laughing in her face, just making her feel like crap.
Nice. Wow. I like it.
The second family was a lot better. It's Jimmy's family. Now, Jimmy is the personal trainer, Meathead. And it turns out that his parents are just as dumb as he is. Listen to his mother when they're all sitting down for dinner.
You two make an attractive couple, by the way.
Yeah, we do.
Actually, you do. You look the same age.
Hey.
No, I'm serious.
No, they don't look the same age.
Not even close.
He's 24, she's 40.
Wow.
Now, are they trying to say that their son looks horrible for his age or that she looks pretty good for an old broad?
I'm guessing they're trying to compliment her, but regardless, right, it's not true. Yeah. Stop lying. Then she gets to meet Colt. Colt's family is... the two brothers of Colt, who's a musician here in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And he brings his two older brothers, who he respects their opinion more than anything else in the world, to meet Stacy the Cougar and see how they react to her. She is given pretty much a hard time by these guys.
How old are you?
How old do you think I am?
41.
43. 40.
Yeah, don't ask how old you think I am.
Never say that.
But they know, all guys know, you have to undershoot. That's the worst thing you can do is go too old.
But these guys are not trying to score for themselves. This is their brother situation, so you know they're going to mess with him.
Yeah, true.
But no one does a worse job of it than Adam's family. Now, not the Adam's family, but Adam's family. Because Adam was one of two twins that were on the show. Remember? There were twin brothers who started on the show.
Right. Mm-hmm.
One of the brothers got voted off. So Adam brings back that twin brother to meet Stacy and to interview her to see if their love is real or not. And the brother don't care at all about Adam. All he's caring about is a second chance at the 40-year-old to get into a pants.
This whole idea of dating an older woman was really my idea. So actually, I'm the reason that he's here right next to you. And so, to me, it was a shock when you turned your cheek on me the first night. And to see Adam come this far and me not be there, you know, I wish him the best of luck, but really, he kind of was along for the ride.
I did not know that.
You're not supposed to tell her that.
Yeah, that sound you hear is a brother being thrown under a bus.
Yeah, no kidding.
By another brother. So Adam leaves the room to give his brother a chance to really talk to Stacy to see what's going on in her mind. And this is the kind of conversation that happens when Adam leaves the room.
Well, after getting to know Adam and myself, do you feel like you should have picked the other twin? I know, it's kind of... No, I'm serious.
Stop it! Stop trying to have sex with the girl your brother's dating.
He lost already, right?
You lose.
All right.
Yeah, there's a reason she asked you to leave the show.
He couldn't get over it. Well, she realizes at the end of that day that Adam just has no real interest in her and doesn't really want to be there. And this is the final four, by the way. She's a little upset that it's gone this far.
I feel pretty foolish that Adam made it to the final four. I think that there were other guys here who I should have given that seat to, and I didn't. Shame on me for keeping him at the house longer than I should have.
No, shame on you for going on a game show to try to find love.
That's right.
At 40 years old. Stupid woman.
The whole process is dumb.
Shame on you for that. Shame on you for Vivica A. Fox waking you up in the morning and making you kiss guys for the final elimination ceremony. Well, it's down to three now. And now she knows what she's doing.
No matter what's happened, I have the final three guys in the house. I am very confident with who I've chosen.
Right, the other idiot you let hang around in the final four, that's over now. Now your judgment is unerring.
Now it's
you're right on.
That's correct.
Now you will find true love in one of these idiots that you have living in the house.
Is there any chance in a million years, Daquisha, you've spent some time with these people all season long, that there's going to be a couple that's going to survive this thing, or are they just going to say goodbye at the finale and never talk to one another again?
Oh, I've stopped hoping for that kind of ending a long time ago. Now I'm just hoping someone pushes her off a balcony.
All right, well, next week.
Next week, the big finale.
Can't wait.
All right, guys.
Thank you, Daquisha.
You are listening to the Kevin and Bean Show for a Thursday morning. The book is called I'll Make You an Offer You Can't Refuse. Former mob boss Michael Franzese joins us in studio after 8 o'clock. Kevin, you've looked at the book. Do we have to be careful what we say around Michael? Are we going to get rubbed out if we say the wrong thing?
No, it's like his, I think, third book. So I think the first two we would get rubbed out over. This is just business advice from a guy who ran a pretty successful business.
That's one way to look at it.
That's what this is.
All right, that's coming up after 8 o'clock this morning on the Kevin and Bean Show. First, though, today is the day that movie fans have been waiting for all over the world. Terminator Salvation is in theaters. We couldn't be more excited to welcome our old friend McGee, the director of the film, back to the Kevin and Bean Show. Hey, McGee, how are you this morning, dude?
I'm doing well, guys. How you doing?
Very good, thank you.
It seems like only yesterday we were on the phone with you talking about whether Ryan and Marissa were going to stay together on the OC, and now what the F are you doing directing Terminator?
I had a lot of pent-up aggression, and I needed to go blow a few things up after that OC.
Well, it looks like you certainly did your share of blowing stuff up, which I love.
Yeah, did you guys get a chance to see it yet?
Well, Ralph did.
Well, what did he say?
He liked it. He said it delivered exactly what you wanted.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, because I've been out running around, and I'm like, I'm wondering what Ralph thinks of this thing.
Well, Ralph, if you're in the other room, please come in and talk to McGee, because he's looking here. He's walking in the door right now.
There he is.
The movie, of course, is open now, is open everywhere. Ralph, you saw the screening last week. The man himself wants to know what you thought.
Yeah, Gene, I got to tell you, it is the biggest Terminator ever. It is the most impressive. I was blown away not only by Christian Bale's performance, which I thought I would be, and Anton Yelchin is really great in it, but it is it's a worthy successor to the Terminator legacy.
Well, that's very nice of you to say. And how about this new kid, Sam Worthington, the guy who stands up to Bale rather nicely?
Yeah, where did you find him?
He was a
bricklayer in Western Australia, and he showed up at Warner Brothers when I was casting the movie. He had two bags. He had a bag full of books and a bag full of clothes, and he gave a great read, and he just seemed like the right guy.
So and he does have sort of a Schwarzenegger-esque quality about him.
It's fair to say he's a tough guy. He's from that culture of Barubra, where if you ever saw that Bra Boys documentary, you know, those guys get in about 2-3 fights a day.
Yeah, they're pretty tough.
OC upbringing.
So this guy wasn't even an actor? He was just working construction and thought, I could be in that movie? And you said, okay?
No. He was also an actor. He was one of these guys that accidentally went to audition with his girlfriend at this highly regarded theatrical school down in Australia, and they took one look at him and said, we want you to get involved, and he did it, and the rest is, as they say, history.
I got you.
Now, was there a concerted effort to not cast a name for that role, or did it just turn out that, although you could have cast a big star, that he was the best person for the work?
Well, I think the first thing we needed to do was reestablish credibility for the franchise. I say with respect, I think it lost its way after that third movie a little bit, and we needed to begin again, and to do that, you need a talented, incredible actor, and that's Christian Bale, in my opinion. The guy's the most talented, incredible actor of his generation. So once we had Christian, we were a little bit more free to go get just who was right for the part.
I read that Entertainment Weekly cover story that's on News Stands Now with Christian Bale on the cover, and it was unbelievable to me how much you refused to accept no for an answer. No matter how many times over how long a period of time he said, I don't want to do the Terminator movie, you refused to move on. It was amazing.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I don't have a rich uncle in Hollywood. I'm from the hardscrabble streets of Newport Beach. And I had to bite and scratch and kick to get done what I got done, and I can't. If I took no for an answer, I'd be nowhere.
I'll tell you, McGee, the odds were stacked against you, I thought, in this film, because we sort of all know the mythology of these movies, and we kind of know that Kyle Reese is John Connor's dad, and we know pretty much how the story ends. And I thought, given that, you really overcame all that and just gave an amazing thrill ride of a movie when it was all said and done.
That's kind of you to say, but I think it was easier than you think, because the first three Terminator movies were present-day movies with the machines coming back in time.
Right.
Our movie takes place in the future after Judgment Day, and James Cameron only ever gave us a little sneak peek at that world. So by virtue of making our whole film in that world, that makes it exciting and a good platform to get involved in.
Did I read this correctly? Because this frightens me a little bit, that this apocalyptic future that you talk about is only in 2018?
Dangerous world. You met this guy in North Korea?
Yeah.
But I mean, this isn't like we're looking at a movie 100 years in the future. You're talking about, you know, 10 years from now. It's crazy.
I know, but I like those stories. I like stories on a personal level and on a community level where that which makes us great could be our undoing. And of course, that's what you get with Tony Montana and Scarface, where he's one day Chico looking at the big house on the hill and
sure.
Then he destroys himself. And look at Oppenheimer and the bomb. And in a great many ways, it's a thinly veiled cautionary tale. And let's do 4 years of graduate work talking about Terminator.
I like that 10 years from now, people are going to be able to say, this is what you thought was going to happen. And they're going to be able to compare it.
Well, there better be jetpacks. That's all I have to say about that.
Whatever happened to the jetpack?
That's a great question.
Don't get being started. Do not get him started.
It's my greatest frustration
of
life.
One of the cool parts of this movie is the Terminator takes on so many more forms other than just the traditional T-800 we're used to seeing in the Schwarzenegger model. They've got motorcycle Terminators and water snake Terminators and flight Terminators. It's just the technology is fantastic in this thing.
Yeah, well, that came from a place of practicality. It's like any contemporary military arsenal. You've got machines that patrol the water, the sky, the roads. And this movie is about that period between Judgment Day and 2029, which was the period where Arnold Schwarzenegger's T-800 came back in time. So what did the arsenal look like at that time? And that's what we developed, and we worked with the great Stan Winston, who has since passed.
Yeah.
And we dedicated the film to his memory, and he designed all the machines. So it's very emotional in that respect, and we're proud of him.
Just tuning in, we have McGee, who is the director of Terminator Salvation. You shot this at an Air Force base?
Yeah, we shot it in Albuquerque, New Mexico, because I needed that difficult landscape. I read The Road by Cormac McCarthy and Does the Android Dream of Electric Sheep and tried to get real cerebral with it before we started shooting the picture. And the arid American West seemed like the correct place to be.
Mm-hmm. And are there times as a director when you've got 1,000 people standing around waiting to know what to do where it's easy to get away from you, like you feel like I've got too many balls up in the air to make this thing happen?
Does that ever happen?
Occasionally I retreat to a corner and make love to myself, yes.
Wow. That's more information than we even asked for.
No, no, no. You and I are done professionally if you keep touching yourself.
I just can't imagine how many things you have to get right to make a movie like this because it's so unbelievably elaborate. That's all I'm saying.
I don't know. I mean, you surround yourself with talented people and you make it happen. We had Jonah Nolan who wrote the script and he wrote The Dark Knight with his brother Chris. And, of course, I mentioned Stan. And Christian was a great partner all the way through. And the highest compliment I think I can pay Christian Bale is just look at every movie he makes, the person who plays opposite him is excellent. Whether it's Russell Crowe in 310 to Yuma or Johnny Depp in Public Enemies coming out or this kid, Sam Worthington, nobody ever heard of. And, of course, the great Heath Ledger in The Dark Knight. And at the end of the day, if you think about it, that's the highest compliment you can give an actor, and that's Christian because he always puts the film first.
Oh, I mean, there's no question he's one of the very, very best actors we have going today. I mean, obviously he's a draw for a lot of people, and you nailed it, McGee, earlier this conversation when you said that's when the beginning of the credibility for the new Terminator movie came, is the minute Christian Bale said yes.
Well,
but we
no
can't
doubt.
let you off the phone without complaining about something vehemently, and I think you know what it's going to be.
I'm not aware of what it's going to be. I'm just getting with this program,
well,
so hit me right in the balls.
All right. Moon Bloodgood, God lover, takes off her top for you.
Yes.
And you don't share that with the world?
You say, no, I don't want to put that in the movie? Is that true?
All right, now listen, that's
Moon Bloodgood's boobs, no.
Did you make a mistake? Yes.
What do you think?
All right, first of all, let's just say she's an extraordinarily healthy woman.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, she is.
Somehow her physicality seems to defy physics as we understand.
Right.
And...
So your job as a director is to showcase that.
So she showcases that, and you say, you somehow make the decision, no, you know what? That doesn't fit.
You know, I just didn't want to do anything to compromise the story and let people say, oh, there goes the genre movie where the hot girl takes your top
off. Screw you, then. Screw you, mister.
You have to have priorities.
You know what, though? In the DVD, you're going to see all of it in its Blu-ray high-definition glory.
There we go.
How about Bryce Dallas Howard, by the way, too? She's all pregnant in the movie. What's that all about?
Well, listen, I cast Bryce because she feels like a first lady. I believe that if something happened to Connor... She plays Kate Connor,
right.
John Connor's wife.
Right.
I believe that she could lead the way. It's
yes.
That Michelle Obama feeling.
I'm with you. She's super hot on top of it, and you made her all pregnant and wearing a bunch of clothes.
Just don't stare in her eyes. You'll turn into a pillar of salt.
Oh, that's
so
scary.
Hot. She's so pretty.
All right, McGee, I have a clip from the movie that I would like to play, and I'd just like you to kind of give us your response to this particular clip.
If you
want to
live.
That's it. What do you think?
I was trying to express the delicate nuances of the human condition.
Yeah.
I identified the emotional pivot in the scene. I thought the sound of the M60 machine gun articulated that which makes us human in the end and the delicate nature of the flesh.
Nice. Never-ending battle of the ego and the id, I think you could capture right there.
Well, it was the Thanatos. It was the death instinct.
Yeah,
indeed,
absolutely.
I was studying Freud in the standard edition, and it was the Freud letters between Einstein and Freud that led me to believe that potentially we're all doomed.
I don't even know. What that is.
See, Kevin, you didn't expect that answer. You smart ass, huh?
Here's all I know. If stuff blows up, it's a win for me.
You know what the funny thing is, though? I think we've gotten to a point where people do so much in CG in movies, and they underestimate the ability of the audience to identify, hey, that's just a cartoon, and it lets the audience off the hook. So we wanted to build everything. We built all the robots. We built the post-apocalyptic world, and then, of course, we ultimately blew it up. And you feel that coming off the screen, and it becomes very tactile and very real and ultimately much more gripping. And I think the audience has more respect for that. And just having seen the movie a few times with some people, that's what they're really coming away from. It's just that, wow, that felt real. I was at the edge of my seat, and I felt involved. And it's because we did everything in a real capacity, and we didn't just draw it in there with computers.
I was thinking you must have sped up global warming about a decade with all the smoke that was billowing into the air as you shot that film.
That is fairly put. Let's just say the state of New Mexico shut down a few times, and Governor Richardson himself came down to kick me in the shins.
Oh, wow. That's rough.
All right. We are out of time. We're going to take one star away because Moon keeps her top on. But other
Don't
than
you
that,
dare. We're... The DVD is going to blow your mind.
Other than that, we can't recommend it enough. Terminator Salvation is available everywhere. See it twice this weekend. That's my advice to you, McGee. We love you, man. It's always great to catch up with you on the Kevin and Bean Show.
And I'm happy to report Chuck is back.
Yeah,
Chuck is doing that too.
Congratulations. Right on, guys.
Very happy
Go
as well.
Go to Subway and have a sandwich and celebrate.
Thank you, McG.
Very cool. See ya.
106.7 K-Rock is KROQ, and it is 7:56.
It's Kevin and Bean Show. I kind of expected a hey at the end of that song.
No, really, giving you the double clap.
Double clap, the dreaded double clap.
Yeah. Dreaded, the awesome, the greatest double clap.
The dreaded double clap of gayness. That's what it is.
Hardly.
That's how it's known.
And that's the greatest double clap song ever, that song.
Yeah.
Ever? Blister sure. the sun.
Ever?
I think so, yeah.
Ever.
Right. Is that the one with the bitch and xylophone solo in it as well?
No.
Is that the same song that
no.
has that?
Or
is that
the, song.
I don't think there is such a thing. Anywhere
it's a
in music.
And xylophone huh? solo?
Those two
it's,
words don't go together.
Gone Baby Gone, right?
Maybe that's what it is.
Yeah.
All right. 7:56 Thursday morning. Ralph is here with the Showbiz Beat for a new day. What the hell's going on?
Was Adam Lambert too gay for America to vote in his American Idol?
Oh, don't start.
That's what they're saying on the internet. Please. They're saying Joe Blow in Iowa wasn't comfortable voting for Adam. A little too flamboyant, a little too Broadway for them.
Is Perez going to make this his new cause now that Miss California has died down?
I wonder who Miss California voted for. I bet she voted for Chris. She doesn't like the gays. Yeah, that's what everyone's saying last night at American Idol. Chris Allen was the surprise upset winner of the American Idol title, and they have a trophy now, Kevin. They've added a trophy.
Oh, really?
You get the big microphone trophy.
Really?
Like, yes.
Are you kidding?
I kid you not.
A big microphone
now
trophy.
Now you've got something you can put on your mantle to say, look at me, I'm the American Idol.
Wow.
Yeah.
I know you hate the Idol, Ralph, and I understand why. You make some very valid points, but the one thing you're forgetting this year is how horrible the winner song is that Cara DeGuardia wrote.
See?
Horrible.
At least it's got that going for it.
Oh,
The horse-faced judge that I hate on that show wrote the song that they all have to record at the end.
Oh, she wrote it
she wrote
specifically for
the
this?
Winner song.
Mm. Right. And, every year they have a winner song. Right?
And apparently it is butt ugly awful.
It's dreadful.
It's and not good.
You almost don't want to win American Idol so that you're not forced to record and tour with that song.
Wow.
Because only one of them has ever been any good. It was that first one. A Moment Like This was only sort of like the
great
only
song.
Hit
yeah.
that came out of those. But, yeah, see?
Yeah.
Now you know why I'm off.
Hey,
I am a lover scorned. I am bitter. I am out of a bad relationship. It's one of those things where you're just in love and you're crazy and you're walking hand in hand in the park, eating ice cream off each other. And the next thing you know, it's a bad breakup. Mm-hmm. And you don't want to hear about that person. You don't want to see him. You don't want to hear your friends talk about that person.
There was a point where you were eating ice cream off of each other.
Yeah, it was hot, man.
So you got a scorched earth policy now with American Idol. Like, come January when the show is back with the auditions, are you going to come to us and go, guys, I don't know. I think I may try it again.
I certainly hope not.
I like to think that I wouldn't, but who knows?
Oh, come on.
Look.
People go back to people. It happens.
Common sense of the heart? I don't think so, my friends. Doesn't exist.
Rihanna might take Chris Brown back. I mean, we just don't know.
It's intriguing, too, at the very beginning, because you get bad, and you get super hot shit.
Right, bad is good.
Yeah.
So,
but then it
gets entertaining.
Kind of good, which is bad.
My name is Earl Star. Ethan Suplee has decided to launch a campaign to save his own sitcom. Now that NBC has axed My Name is Earl.
What'd they ask?
I'm getting the keyboard cat to play you both off.
Damn it.
Do it live.
He plays Earl's brother on the show.
That's right. He plays Randy.
Would you like to take that back?
Yes. Would you?
Yes.
Yes. He is trying to get everyone to ask Fox to pick up My Name is Earl so they can continue on.
Oh, so they're not trying to save it on the same network. They're trying to get a new network.
According to a post on his Twitter.com page, he's directing fans to the website of Fox, asking them to save Earl by pestering the Fox bosses into picking up the series. So apparently he would like to be on Fox. He's saying, screw you to NBC. That's what he's saying. And Zach Galifianakis.
Yeah, I love Zach.
He's in that new movie, The Hangover.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
He said the scariest experience he ever had as a performer was doing 30 takes of the scene where Mike Tyson knocks him out.
Oh, wow.
Because you have to realize Mike is not an actor, nor is he a stuntman.
Yeah.
And they had to try to explain to him carefully the premise of throwing a fake punch in a movie.
Don't hit him.
He said he believed if any of the punches had connected, he would have died. And so it was important for him to work that out. He said, we did about 30 takes for the fight scene, and he said it was the scariest experience of my life.
I can imagine.
I think you would hurt if Tyson hit you, even if he wasn't crying.
You think?
Your head would turn to a pink mist,
right,
and you would collapse like the headless corpse of a chicken on the floor. And then that chick would run around a little bit, and then Kevin would call it a zombie.
It is a zombie.
It's not a zombie.
It is.
It's just a chicken with his head cut
off.
Don't
bring this into the...
Don't
bring this up unless you want to go a few rounds.
Let's bring it.
You're being, by the way, challenging me to a boxing match yesterday? When are we going to follow up on that?
He said he would drop it.
I know. When does that fight happen?
Anytime.
When is that match going to happen?
How about tomorrow? When is DJ Spina Bifida going to put his money where his mouth is?
That's what I'm saying. Let's do it.
Let's
get it on. Today's celebrity birthday is Richard Hatch from Battlestar Galactica, 64 years old today. Mr. T celebrates his 57th birthday. Imagine the training videos, being skipping rope and holding a heavy bag and everything.
I'm going to get Mr. T as my trainer.
You should. My prediction, pain. And actress Lisa Edelstein from The House, who plays Dr. Cuddy on. Is it Edelstein or Edelstein? Do we know?
I don't know.
You're the House aficionado.
I know, and I've seen her name all the time, but I've never heard it pronounced all that often.
I do know that she wears incredibly the wrong clothing for a woman in her position at a hospital.
Yes.
Well, she's
really
got one
inappropriate
of the
for the workplace hospital.
Got one of the great asses on television, though.
She does.
You don't want to hide that. You don't hide your light under a bushel. You know what I'm saying?
Right. But you walk into the hospital walk into the hospital administrator's office, and she's got the top that's open with the bra underneath.
Right. Yeah. Right.
It's just
that's the way things should be.
Is what I'm saying.
That's the way things should be.
You.
What's wrong with you?
You're the guy that studies weather reports for a glimpse of a hardened nipple on this broad on NBC, and yet you got smoking hot girl walking around in a pencil skirt with her top open on House, and that's a problem for you.
I'm not saying I don't enjoy it. I'm just saying that it's so glaringly inappropriate for the workplace that it would never fly in real life. That's
I'm giving you a zero for the day.
Absolutely. Play them out, keyboard cat. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
All I'm saying is when the FBI comes around, Kevin, you're in the photograph with Michael, not me, okay? I'm not in the room, so frankly, it's on you, dude.
Michael Francese, how do you say it?
Francese,
right. Okay. Is in the studio with us. The book is called I'll Make You an Offer You Can't Refuse. And it's about your time in the mafia in New York. Is that the correct word, mafia?
Mafia,
La Cosa Nostra?
La Cosa Nostra, yeah.
Tell us, give us kind of a recap of your meteoric rise through that world.
Well, my dad was the underboss of the Colombo crime family back in the 60s, and originally he didn't want me to get involved in a life, and I was on my way to medical school, was going to be a doctor, when my dad got a 50-year prison sentence after a conviction in federal court.
Mm-hmm.
And Joe Colombo, who was the boss of the family back then, kind of got really close to me, took me under his wing. I started to meet a lot of my dad's friends and realized that if I didn't get on the street and help my dad out, he was going to die in prison. So I went to see him in Leavenworth. We had a discussion, and he knew my mind was made up, and that's the route I was going to go.
How do you help him by getting involved in that?
Well, you know, my dad obviously did a lot of bad things in his life, and so did I. But that particular crime that he's done 32 years in prison on, he was innocent of. And it was a bad case, and most people knew that. So I knew I had to get on the street and try to help him out and overturn the conviction.
Mm-hmm.
You got to raise money. You know, you got to have some influence in order to do that. So he said to me, if you're going to be on the street, you need to do it the right way. And in his mind, the right way was to become a member of his life. So he proposed me for membership, and a year later, I was in.
When you were 24?
I was 22.
22?
Yeah.
That has to be one of the youngest, right?
Yeah, I was young. You know, they had an expression back then. They hadn't made guys, or they hadn't brought guys into the life for about 25 years. They had an expression that the books were closed. But that period of time, the early 70s, they were building up the families, and I just happened to, catch the right time. And so within a year, I was made.
Were you successful in getting your father's conviction overturned?
Well, never getting his conviction overturned, but I did get him out of prison after 10 years on parole. Back then they had parole. But my dad, he violated his parole 5 times.
Oh.
Yeah, each time for association, meeting with other criminals. So he's done 32 years in prison as a result of that. He's 92 years old now.
Wow.
Oh, my. Wow.
And he's out.
Now, how high did you get in the organization?
I reached a pretty high level. I was a cop de regime, or captain. And that's a direct appointment from the boss. And, because of the type of money that I was earning and kind of the status that I reached, I had a considerable amount of power in the family.
In the book, you say $6 to $8 million a week.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money.
And more during the NFL season, I bet.
That's all gambling?
It's all everything. Describe
I was fortunate in that I knew how to use that life to benefit me in business. And I was involved in a lot of the traditional things. I had a major gambling operation. I was a Shylock, lend money on the streets. But I also had legitimate businesses. I had two automobile dealerships. I had a big film and distribution company. And the major income earner for me was the wholesale gasoline business.
That's what I want to hear about, because I didn't know that existed, I guess. But tell us how you made money in wholesale gasoline sales.
Well, it didn't really exist until we created this whole scheme back then. But basically, we were wholesalers licensed to collect the tax on every gallon of gasoline. At that time, the tax was, 9 cents federal and about 25 to 30 cents state and local. So we had close to 40 cents a gallon in taxes.
So you could sell it just like the government did, or whoever, I mean, not the government, the big companies did.
Right.
But you got the taxes instead of the U.S. government?
Yeah, well, most of the wholesalers are responsible to collect the taxes, and then you got to pay the government.
Oh,
but
I see.
We devised a way to collect the tax and not pay the government.
And they like that, or they don't like that?
Oh, they didn't like it. We did it for about 7 years, but I was at the height of my operation. I was selling about a half a billion gallons of gasoline a month. So if you do the math.
Half a billion gallons a month.
Yeah.
I bet you, did you ever put out a contract on Al Gore? Get him stop talking about the stupid Prius?
Nah, he couldn't hurt us at all. People still buy gas.
What'd you do with the money? Is that offshore account money? Is that where that goes?
Well, it was a challenge getting rid of the money, I'll be honest with you, and it was quite an intricate operation in handling that. So,
do you have any of that money that you would still like to get rid of?
It's burning a hole in your pocket.
No, I'd like to keep it now if I had it.
Now, we're going to take some phone calls in a minute from people that want to ask you whatever questions they have. How did you get out of it? And first of all, you went to prison, right?
Yes, 8 years.
8 years. They tried.
What did they get you for, Michael?
I was indicted five times, and I went to trial five times. I was acquitted five times. Rudy Giuliani was the last big case that I went to trial on, and I was acquitted in that case. But I finally took a plea, because every year they'd come at me with another indictment, and my whole plan to get out of the life was to take a plea, do some time, marry this young girl that I fell in love with, move out to California, and try to drift into the sunset.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't work out that way, but the prison time, that certainly happened.
How many years? You did 10 years, did you say?
I did 8 out of the
8
10.
Years. And then how did you not get killed?
Well, that was easier said than done. But it was a long struggle that I had for a while. You see, when you walk away from the life, everybody thinks the next step is you're going to become a federal witness.
Right.
And the government
changed your name. Right.
The government put a lot of pressure on me. They were trying to get me to cooperate. They put the word out on the street that I was cooperating. My dad disowned me. Boss put a contract on me.
Wow.
They locked me down when I was in prison. They were afraid I was going to get killed. When I got out, I had to dodge bullets for several years until things died down. And most of the reason they died down is because I never did testify against anybody. That's not what I wanted to do. And I knew the life pretty well. I knew what I could do and what I couldn't do, so I had a jump on them. And then, quite honestly, I just outlasted everybody. Just about everybody I know is either dead or in prison for the rest of their lives.
And
I'm here.
All right.
Michael, how did you get five acquittals? Because in the movies, you see they figure out a way to get to the jury and pay them off to vote your way. Was it something like that, or were they really just bringing you up on charges they couldn't prove?
You know, they were always, you know, in organized crime, a lot of times they don't prosecute you for the crime. They go after the criminal and try to create the crime around you. And in each case that they indicted me on, it was never an open and shut case. And fortunately, I had a lot of experience fighting my dad's case. I knew the law pretty well.
Right.
And worked very, very hard to beat these cases. And racketeering cases are tough to beat. And I had three of them. But I just, call it good fortune, call it good luck, whatever.
So you pled guilty eventually so that you could go to jail and so that you could get out of the life?
Exactly. That was my way to make an exit. I knew that, you know, they would never stop coming after me. So eventually I was going to do some time. So I tried to negotiate a plea that was all encompassing, you know, included everything that might have been out there on me. Do some jail time, move out to the West Coast, marry my wife, live happily ever after over that.
All right. I won't ask you for specifics, Michael, but are there crimes that you committed or were party to that you still that you never served time for, that you still feel guilty about?
Well, you look, I'm in that life 17 years, and you're in that life every day. You're violating God's laws and man's laws. I mean, that's just the way it is. It's a criminal organization. So, fortunately, statute of limitations is up on all of those things. But, you know, you're in that life. You're committing crimes every day, just being a part of the life. So do I feel guilty about it? You know, I've realized something. You can't change what's happened in the past.
Right.
What's done is done. So I try to move on and do better with my life, and hopefully in the past 10 to 12 years I have.
You do talk about people's opinion of you and your remorse and, you know, how you really feel about it and how people tend to come at you for trying to, you know, profit now from mm-hmm. that. You go out of your way in this book to say it's not a life anyone should go into, and I shouldn't have, and it was wrong. And is that enough for most people, or do you still get people saying...
You know, I found out this country is pretty forgiving if you're credible and you prove yourself over a period of time. Now, I've been out there 10 or 12 years. I mean, I speak at colleges, high schools. I work with all the pro sports. I speak in churches quite a bit.
So if they believe your apology,
I think so.
It works out.
People know that you're sincere over a period of time. And listen, I carry a lot of baggage from my past. I mean, it's a long time ago, but it's still there. And you can understand why people could be, you know, hey, is this for real or not? And you got to just see how time works out and works out in your favor.
This is a fascinating conversation that I can already tell we're going to not have enough time for today. But Michael Frenzies is in the studio with us. The book is out now called I'll Make You an Offer You Can't Refuse. It's his third best-selling book, and you ought to check it out. And you ought to pick up the phone and call us right now at 1-800-520-1067. If you'd like to ask a mob boss, we'll take your calls when we return right after this on The Kevin and Bean Show. The latest in our long, long series of Ask Us, where we have experts in on a variety of topics and you get to call and ask questions, is on the air right now. It's Ask a Mob Boss. Our guest is, he's the only high-ranking member of the Mafia to ever quit the mob, refuse government protection, and live to come on The Kevin and Bean Show. Michael Frenzies is here. The book is called I'll Make You an Offer You Can't Refuse. Michael, you ready to take some questions from our audience?
I am.
First, our wonderful theme song.
Woke up this morning, we're gonna ask a mob boss. Did you ever see Cucamonga Heat? Did you ever do a double cross? Woke up this morning, Kevin and Bean are gonna ask a mob boss.
A lot of work went into that.
Yeah, Eric.
All right, 1-800-520-1067 if you have questions for Mr. Frenzies. Why don't we start with, we might as well start with line one with Vince, because this has got to be the most commonly asked question, but it's because we all want to know. Hi, Vince, you're on with Michael. Go ahead.
Hey, how you doing, guys? Good. Mr. Frenzies, it's Lana. How you doing?
How are you, man?
Good, good, good. Love your shows, love your books when you're on the Jim Rome show. Check it out. Guy like Tony Soprano goes and sees a shrink. Doesn't live very long after that, does he?
He'd be in the trunk of the car by the end of the week, for sure.
I figured that much.
Really?
That's what makes that show so great.
Yeah, it was
interesting. Okay, let's talk about that for a sec, because obviously there is the doctor-patient confidentiality, so you can't assume that whatever Tony is talking to Dr. Melfi about is going to stay quiet. Why is that not enough? Why do you still have to kill him?
You're talking about mob guys here. We don't worry about confidentiality. If you're sitting with a psychiatrist, you're saying something, and that's enough. So believe me, he wouldn't last a week if that was going on.
What are some of the, in real life, in the real life mob world, what are some of the other things like that that get you killed?
Well, I mean, you know, you have pretty strict policies there. Respect is a huge issue. You can't ever be disrespectful to another maid guy. You can never raise your hand to another maid guy. You can't, you know, call somebody out, another maid guy, in public. You can never, ever, ever even give the, you know, the impression that you're fooling around with somebody's wife or daughter or girlfriend. You know, that's an immediate death sentence.
Does a lot of things fall under the category of disrespect, that just anyone that feels angry at you, they just call it disrespect? Does that happen?
Well, I mean, no, you can't get too carried away with that. I mean, it has to be an outward display of disrespect. You know, if we're at a sit down and we're trying to, you know, to work out a situation or a problem, you can't call the other guy a liar. If you do that at the table, you lose the argument, number one, and you could be in serious trouble depending upon who the guy is. So, I mean, you know, there's some very strict policies there that have to be, you know, that have to be lived by, and they're strictly enforced.
I want to follow up on the Sopranos question, which is the rest of the show was complete fiction,
you know,
sort of close.
A couple of things I didn't like. I mean, that crew looked inept. I mean, they weren't big money makers. They made the guys look like, you know, they're almost barely surviving on whatever money they were making.
Well, they were small time, a lot of the guys on the show, right?
Well, Tony Soprano's supposed to be a boss, and, you know, bosses make money, trust me, because everybody's paying up to them, so they make money. But the crew was kind of inept. And the other thing that troubled me about the show is that the disrespect that the kids had for their mother and father.
Yeah.
I mean, until today, I don't think I ever said a bad word to my dad. I mean, that's how we were brought up.
Well, and, your dad is a little different than my dad.
Good point.
I mean, really, I wouldn't have either, I don't think. Yeah. You got that idea early, right?
No, that's true. Yeah. I mean, it, you know, never cussed at the dinner table. Trust me on that.
So what would a mob boss do today if he had a kid who acted out like that, was disrespectful like AJ was, and maybe, you know, a kid that didn't approve of the lifestyle, didn't want to go into the lifestyle, didn't want to have anything to do with it? I mean, how would you handle that?
Well, he wouldn't be forced into the lifestyle. Like, I wasn't forced into it. I eventually made a choice. My dad tried to keep me out of it, but that's pretty difficult to do. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, look, guys can get pretty angry with something like that. You just know that you don't do it. You know, you have to be a strange kid or just a really rebellious type of kid to do something like that. I mean, I think a dad mm-hmm. would almost write him off.
It's interesting to me. Excuse me, Kevin. I'm sorry. It's interesting to me to see that you have these very strict codes. You have this. Is it the omerta? Is that what the honor is? Is that what that word means?
Well, omerta is the code of silence. That means you don't talk about the life, especially the secrets of that life, with anybody outside of the life. And certainly you never cooperate with the government.
So you have all these rules that you abide by that are very important to you, including honor and respect of the people that are in the lifestyle. But it doesn't extend to the people who you rob and kill and maim. And I mean, it's weird. It seems so insulated. Like the people on the inside of the bubble get the good stuff, and everybody else is you're a victim.
Well, let me clarify. Number one, it is a very treacherous life. I mean, I've seen guys that were there one day and gone the next because of money reasons, because they were set up within the life. I mean, if you survive that life, if you die of old age and die free, you've really accomplished something, because it's a tough life, and you always got to be worried about the guy next to you. Look, when a guy goes down in that life, it's usually his best friend that walks him into a room he never walks out again. So, I mean, the life is treacherous itself. However, they live under a Machiavellian type of a philosophy where the end justifies the means. You know, rob, steal, cheat, do whatever you have to do, but always give the impression of being honest and having integrity and being credible. But whatever it takes to make a living, whatever it takes to capitalize on the outside, you do.
But it's very much a if you're a made guy, you're in. Everyone else is out, right? I mean, just there's no other category, really.
No, if you're a made guy, everybody else could be the Pope, the President of the United States, or anybody in between. They're all considered suckers. That's it.
That's it.
And they're fair game.
I just know that ever since we lost Big Pussy, I will not even go on a boat. I mean, I have a lot of friends that invite me. I just won't go. All right, let's on that topic, let's talk to Nick. He's on line 4 on the Kevin and Bean Show. Nick, you're on with our guest, Michael Francis. Again, the book is called I'll Make You an Offer You Can't Refuse, available everywhere now. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. I just wanted to say, long-time listener, first-time caller. I love you guys.
Thank you.
And so my question is, how does one put a hit on somebody? I mean, like, is it even true? Like, how could, like, say someone like me, Kevin, or at least May, or anybody just come up to you or find you, and how do we find you, and say, hey, I want you to take care of somebody for me? How does that even work?
Well, finding me, that's you're not going to do that, number one, because I don't put hits out. But
But normal people can't. It has to come from your group, right?
No. First of all, there's not wanton killing. You don't go out and just kill everybody. That doesn't happen. I mean, it's a very, very serious situation, and it has to be approved by the boss. You can't just do that and take it up on your own. You can have problems for doing that. So, I mean, it's something that's considered very, very serious, and I don't ever want to make light of it, because it's one of the really dark sides of that life. But it is a reality of that life, and it's very difficult. But that has to get the approval of the boss. Normally, it's discussed among all the capo regimes, the captains. And if it's decided that that person committed such a grievous act that was the consequence, then, again, the boss had to approve it. But a lot of consideration goes into this. I don't want anybody to think that. You know, and again, I'm not justifying it in any way, but this is not just, hey, shoot this guy and end it. It's not like that at all.
Mm-hmm. Let's take one more before we break. JR is on the line. He's on line 8 on the Kevin and Bean Show. JR, thanks for holding on. You're on with Michael Francis. Go ahead.
Hey, how's it going, guys? Good. I just want to know, Southern California, Orange County, is there a lot of mafia activity going on there?
There isn't. You know, when I had to, whenever I would leave to go into another city to conduct some business, maybe Chicago, Kansas City, Tampa, Florida, I always had to put it on record with the boss and then go meet the boss in that town and let him know that I was coming in to do business. In California, when I came out here and I first got involved back in the late 70s, I asked, who should I see? And they said, hey, those are Mickey Mouse guys out there. Do whatever you want. And if the problem comes up, we'll handle it later.
So there was nothing, no important enough people out here to even deal with.
There's really no family out here. The guys that were running things were originally from Cleveland, but they had no real base of operations. It was really nothing. Until today, there's nothing really going on here. That's why I'm out here 20
Orange
years.
Come on, Orange County. Come on.
We got Hollywood.
Step up.
We got Hollywood.
Michael, what is the, if you believe the government, and they've had some very high-profile convictions in recent years, John Gotti on down, if you believe them, they've essentially busted up the families and there is no organized crime anymore. What do you say to that?
Oh, that's absolutely not true. But, you know, an interesting thing I read in a newspaper a couple of days ago is that when I was in the life, they had 1,200 agents assigned to the five families in New York. Today they have 60. And here's the thing. They go gung-ho on the mob for 10 years. They lock up a lot of guys, put them away, do some devastation, and then they back off because something else comes up, like terrorism. And they take agents off and they go on to something else. And during that next period of time, the mob builds up again. And so it goes in cycles. And I've seen it happen like that, you know, throughout my life. And
where are we in that process now?
I think now there's a time of buildup. I mean, I've been hearing things that the families are starting to rebuild again. They're getting their act together. A lot of guys went to jail. New guys come in. You know, I think it's in trouble. I think they have problems because law enforcement has gotten so many weapons against them now. But I don't think I'll see its demise in my lifetime. That's for sure.
So Kevin and I could start a family if we wanted to, right?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, because that's really the goal of this.
Yeah, out here.
All right.
Well, let me tell you, out here they only had 3 agents assigned. So if you're going to start a family, this is the place to do it.
All right. Yeah, no kidding. The book out now is called I'll Make You an Offer You Can't Refuse. 2 other books, Quitting the Mob and Blood Covenant, also available. Our guest is author Michael Franzese. We'll take a break and come back with more of your questions. 1-800-520-1067 if you want to ask a mob boss. We'll continue on The Kevin and Bean Show. Our fascinating guest this hour in our latest in the series of Ask Us is Michael Franzese. He is a former mob boss. The current book is called I'll Make You an Offer You Can't Refuse, in bookstores everywhere through his website at michaelfranzese.com or, as I'm typing in right now, on amazon.com. I'm going to be buying Michael's book. Before we go back to the calls, what's the sweetest car you ever owned, Michael?
Oh, gosh, I had so many. you know, I wasn't a Ferrari type of guy. I love Mercedes. I mean, they were my favorite, and I was pretty loyal to them.
Would you avoid conspicuous consumption because you had so much money coming in that was off the books? Would you never go out and buy a $300,000 car if the government thought you only made $100,000 a year?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we always had to watch that because income tax was a major investigation on us all the time. But listen, I had a jet plane, I had a helicopter. We were generating a lot of legitimate money also. So, and the companies I had were able to, you know, to show that they could afford those type of conveniences, I would say. So, I mean, I lived pretty high back then. I mean, I got to be honest.
So 1-800-520-1067 is the number if you would like to ask a mob boss.
Woke up this morning, we're going to ask a mob boss.
That's the short version. All
right. Now, would you kill that dude if we gave you his name and address? Would you take care of that for us?
All right, let's
go to Sergio. He's on line 2 on the Kevin and Bean Show. Sergio, you're on with Michael Franzese. Go ahead.
Good morning, guys. Good morning, Lisa May.
Good morning.
I've seen a lot of these reenactments on documentaries of the mob, and it's always usually the same ritual when the guy's getting made. They're either burning a card in his hand or they're burning a statue of a saint. How accurate is that? Is that actually how it happens, or is that all for just TV?
No, it's accurate. I mean, every family does it a little bit differently, but that's the basic ritual. You know, they burn a picture of a saint or a statue in your hand. Uh-huh. They cut your finger, some blood drops on the floor, and then you take the oath. So that's pretty accurate.
How many of the guys in your day spoke Italian?
Most of them, I would say.
Really?
Yeah, because I had a lot of old-timers during my time in the mob, so a lot of them did. My dad spoke fluently, the bosses usually did, and they were yelling at us because we didn't understand it, but I tell them, hey, we live in America. You know, everybody talks America.
Tell them your view of the Italians and their successes in all fields. You write about that in the book, and it's kind of funny.
Well, the mob, you know, I mean, mob guys thinks the Italians were the best at everything, greatest at everything, the greatest ball players. There was nobody better than Joe DiMaggio. There wasn't any greater, artist than Michelangelo. I mean, uh-huh. So Italians always view Italians as being the greatest. But, you know, oddly enough, we weren't prejudiced. I mean, we would work with any kind of group, and we didn't have any kind of prejudices like that. We were certainly weren't racist. We just believed Italians were the best. Everybody else. Didn't matter if you're white, black, or anybody else.
Everybody else is just secondary.
Exactly.
All right, let's go to Eric, who has a question for you. Hi, Eric.
Yeah, Eric.
Hey, guys. I always thought I'd feel a little intimidated talking to someone like you, Michael, but surprisingly, I'm not. I would like to know if there's still any influence in Las Vegas or Atlantic City, and also what may have run them out of Las Vegas in the first place.
Well, there is, but not nearly what it was during my day, and certainly earlier than that. You have mob influence now. You got to understand something. You know, people that are involved in gambling, a lot of them are street guys. A lot of these croupiers and the casino managers, they had their roots in the street. And so because you have your roots in the street, you still have associations and relationships, and those type of people don't scare you off. So there's certain scams that still go on, you know, within the casinos. However, now Vegas is all corporate, and there's no mob ownership at the high level like there used to be.
And that's BS, right?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't happen now. But, you know, wherever there's gambling, you're going to have the mob, you know, closely associated with that in some way. And that's true of Atlantic City also, but not nearly what it was years ago.
There are still millions of dollars changing hands on illegal bookmaking in this country every weekend, though, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, look, whatever is done legitimately, it is dwarfed by what is done illegally. Yeah. It's major, mm-hmm. major business. I mean, I brought in several million dollars on a weekend every week, and the more legitimate gambling came into play, the better we did.
Sure.
So it's like
that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, it's like when you have one restaurant on a street, nobody goes there. You put 10, and all of a sudden it becomes Restaurant Row, and everybody does well. Same with gambling.
In your current book, I'll Make You an Offer You Can't Refuse, it's a business book, and you give talks to businesses, corporate gigs and whatnot. What are a couple of the things that you talk about as learning and becoming effective at inside the mob that can translate to people outside the mob?
You know, basically, when we were in that life, we lived under a Machiavellian philosophy, who was the 16th century philosopher Machiavelli. He wrote a book called The Prince, and in that book, he told the prince how he should maintain control of his kingdom. And basically, his philosophy was, end justifies the means, anything goes, you know, to be successful. And that's how I operated my business, and you certainly can be successful in that way. However, you're always going to take a fall. And, you know, I was very influenced by King Solomon in the Book of Proverbs. I think it's one of the most brilliant books ever written. It comes out of the Old Testament Bible, but, you know, no religious tone. I'm just saying the guy was brilliant. And he taught about how operating a business with integrity and how in the long run you're always going to, you know, capitalize on that. And so, I mean, that's the major theme throughout the book. But I talk a lot about the sit-downs that I used to have. And
describe
how,
sit-downs. And
well, you know, a sit-down was the mob's way of solving any kind of dispute, whether it be a guy's life in jeopardy or a business dispute within the family or on the other side of or with another family. And they were a very effective tools. You sat down. You knew what you were doing. You cut to the chase. You had to get a resolution. There was no talking out of turn, no bringing up any other outside stuff. And within a half an hour, 45 minutes, you had your situation resolved.
It was done. And you never thought about continuing it or going back. Once the ruling happened, it was over.
Rarely was there continuance, and the decision was final, and that's it. You abided by it, or there were consequences. And it was very effective. And if we didn't solve that, we had so many disputes coming up on a daily basis. If we didn't create that system, things would have never gotten done. So the mob is very effective in solving things and getting to the point. And, you know, I talk a lot about that, a lot about the negotiating skills that that you learn in that life. I mean, I had, you know, negotiations with the federal government. I had negotiations with John Gotti, with Paula Castellano, with the members of other families. And they were usually over business situations. And there's certain techniques and tactics you use when you're going against people like that that certainly can be translated and certainly benefited me in business when I was dealing with major studios here and automobile manufacturers and so on and so forth. So, I mean, a lot of things I learned in that life really, really helped me in the legitimate world. And unless you took an oath and became a member, you're not going to know these things.
Right.
So, I mean, I spell them out in the book, and hopefully people will benefit by them.
When you walk out of this radio studio today, do you just take whichever car in the parking lot you like? I mean, you just point and have your guy open it up, you drive away?
No, I don't do that. I used to have my guys, you know, handle all that stuff, but that was then, this is now.
Not anymore.
Well, no. We are out of time for questions. We had so many good ones we didn't get to. We may have to have you back another time, Michael, if it's possible.
Because well, I live this has close been, by, so this is convenient.
This has been all right. So fascinating. Again, go to Amazon.com and check out Michael's books, including the new one called I'll Make You an Offer You Can't Refuse. Really a fascinating hour. Please don't kill us, and thank you so much for coming in on the Kevin and Bean Show.
No, you're safe, guys.
All right. Ralph is here with the Showbiz Beat. How'd you like our mob boss, Ralph? How'd you enjoy that?
Nice guy.
Yeah, that's what I'd say, too.
That is the correct answer. No, look, I grew up around guys like that in Philadelphia. I mean,
right.
I didn't have a chance to talk to this guy, but the Scarfo family that ran Philadelphia was all over South Philly, and I went to college with a relative of Nicky Scarfo's. Little Nicky.
Yeah.
How close did you get it to getting into the...
I whacked a few guys. You know, I did some favors for some people. I'm not going to deny it. But
well, who didn't?
But, yeah, no, I hung out in South Philly quite a bit, and those guys were on every street corner. You know?
There's something...
They always smell good, those guys.
Is that right?
They always got a lot of good cologne.
Am I right? There's something attractive about that lifestyle. You know that you don't want to get into it, but there's a part of you that goes, it'd be pretty cool.
Yeah.
Right? I dated a girl whose family was connected, and that was a little unnerving.
But you make the wrong move.
But they were remarkably honorable considering their life and what they do and what they did. There was a real set of guidelines that if you adhered by, then you didn't have any problem with anybody, you know? But if you didn't play by the rules, there was hell to pay.
Yeah.
I wish I had a chance to talk to this guy about the foreign mobs that are coming to America. Oh, the Russian mob and the Asian mobs and that kind of stuff, and how... They don't play nearly by the set of rules. There's no really honor among those thieves versus the omerta that the mafia had. And I was wondering how they dealt with that.
You know? I was, too. There were so many great questions. We just clearly were running late anyway, but we just ran out of time. But we definitely will invite Mr. Frenzies back. He was a lot of fun. Mm. All right. Let's take our final look at the Showbiz Beat for a Thursday morning. What's going on?
Shia LaBeouf has an Oedipus complex, apparently.
Uh-oh.
He tells Us Weekly magazine that the sexiest woman he's ever known is his mother.
Whoa!
And if he could meet her and marry her, he would.
Hmm.
Did he use the word sexiest?
Yep.
That's my mom, dude.
What? Shayna is her name. I haven't seen her, but I'll do her.
What? Yeah, but she's not your mom.
Oh, that's true.
That's troubling.
Odd.
That's
like troubling. All boys love their moms, but Shia.
Not like that, right? No.
Yeah.
No.
Go, boy. You know, that works out. The woman accused of having an affair with Bruce Springsteen is fighting back in court. Ann Kelly was accused by her husband, Arthur Kelly, during their divorce proceedings of cheating on him with the boss. Well, she is firing back in court today with a 27-page document accusing her husband of being a jealous and abusive spouse who has cheated on her many times.
What?
Also with Bruce. I'm just kidding
about
that.
That's a joke. Okay, good.
Wouldn't that be great, though?
It would be great.
A gay affair with the boss. She also says that she ever had an affair with Bruce Springsteen and claims it was Arthur's lawyer's plan to come up with the idea of dragging Bruce's name into this mess because celebrities will usually pay big money to get out of a legal situation and make it go away, and that's what Arthur's lawyer is counting.
Wow.
I think a lot of lawsuits drag celebrities in for that exact same reason.
Yeah, so... There's your update on Springsteen banging that chick.
And guys.
What do you think, Ralph? What's your gut on whether that happened?
I don't think if Springsteen wanted to fool around, he would do it with some housewife in Jersey. Yeah. You know, I just don't. I just don't see him doing that.
No.
The guy's got plenty of opportunity.
Sure.
Except he's got that bitch following him around all the time on the road. Don't put your wife in your band. What the hell are you thinking?
I agree.
Especially when she looks like that. Today's celebrity birthdays, Richard Hatch from Battlestar Galactica, 64 years old today. Mr. T turns 57. Judge Reinhold, the actor, is 52. Lisa Edelstein, what? Lisa Edelstein, what? Cuddy from House.
There you go.
She's 41 years old today. I am Ralph Garman. I walk the Showbiz Beat.
Ralph, you're complaining now? You're finally putting your foot down? You're bucking it? You're saying no more? This is it?
I've had an ass full, and I think everyone has, especially the listeners. You guys just have to stop with the lame-ass animal.
I need to talk to the zombie fire ant.
See, you don't. This is bull.
Isn't.
It is.
It's a real story out of Texas.
I know it is, but us doing the bit where you guys call and then an animal answers
right.
And I do a silly animal voice for some stupid funny. Story. Not funny. It hasn't been funny in years.
What about the twittering cat?
No one cares.
What about the chimps?
Not a cat that's twittering, by the way. There's no cat that's twittering.
What about the pimp chimp?
What's the pimp chimp?
I don't know
chimp?
The pimp chimp story.
Yeah, tell me that one.
They trade sex for meat, apparently.
Well, who doesn't?
But, Ralph, I don't understand why this is any different than when you did the African bee porn.
It isn't any different. That's the problem. That's my point, is it's not any different. Enough. We've done it. We've done it well, I think, several times. Most of the times we haven't done it well, and I think now we move on. We grow up. We look for a new type of bit to do on the Kevin.
Do you remember the drug-sniffing wasp?
I do remember that, yes. I do remember the drug-sniffing wasp.
But how about what we called and you were the fat panda?
I do remember fat panda. And I think maybe we may have peaked with fat panda. I think our best days with the animal voices are behind us, fellas. Oh, that's what I'm saying.
Do you remember the Russian insomniac bear?
No, I don't happen to remember that one.
Very sleepy, that
bear.
Sure,
it was bad. I guarantee you. I guarantee you he was a cranky bear who couldn't get to sleep.
Come
who had
on,
a Russian
Ralph.
Accent.
All right, listen.
Just one more.
No,
come on.
I think we're done. Right, that's my point is I think we're done.
I put some on the wheel. Okay, so we'll spin the wheel.
The wheel's never good.
It is good.
No,
and then
it usually comes up Anthony Kiedis.
So we've got Socks the Twittering Cat. That's one of them. We've got the Pimp Chimp. That's another one.
Uh-huh.
We have the Zombie Fire Ants.
Okay.
Right. And oddly enough, we do have Anthony Kiedis.
Of course, we always do. That's always on the wheel.
All right, so we're going to spin it, and then you'll run into the other room, and we'll do this. It'll be fresh as yesterday's headlines.
Yes, it will. As fresh as yesterday's cheese.
All right, you ready?
But this will be it, right? This will be the farewell.
No, this will be
this
one of
the farewell.
This will
be it.
This
yeah.
is the farewell. This is it.
This yeah.
is it.
When this we is say it. This is it.
Right. This is the farewell. Okay.
The wheel of bad animal voices.
I'm excited. How dare you, bad? Come on.
Socks the Twittering Cat.
Yeah. Oh, that's who we're going to talk to here?
Yes.
This is the cat. This is Sockington with his Twitter account who has, what does he have, half a million people following him or something like
yes,
that already?
He does.
And I believe producer Alex is lined up Socks on the phone right now on the Kevin and Bean Show. Hey, kitty kitty.
Meow.
See? Already funny, Ralph. How can you be complaining?
So, Socks, you Twitter?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I Twitter. Talking to Kevin and Bean right now on their radio show.
Oh, you're twittering right this second.
Send.
Right.
Yeah, that's what that's doing, Lisa. I'm pretending to Twitter and saying it out loud.
Now, Socks, apparently you also...
I don't need help on this, by the way. It's bad enough as it is.
You usually Twitter about food.
I love tender vittles.
Your friend Penny...
And meow.
Your friend Penny Cat.
What?
And playing with a toy named Baron Von Shaky Mouse. I'm not making that up. That's part of the story.
That is... up.
you and your owner live out there in Massachusetts. You have over a half a million followers on the Twitter. It sounds like it's a lot of fun for you, Socks.
My owner is a lonely woman.
Why do you suppose so many people are interested in what a cat has to Twitter about?
What's happening here? What's going on in Sockington?
Are you committing suicide? What are you
doing? Baron Von Shaky Mouth.
I don't think that's... I don't think we can say that. Oh, we didn't...
We didn't mean to interrupt. I'm sorry if this is a bad time, Socks.
Dead?
And now, a moment with Ralph.
All that for evil to succeed, all that needs to be done is meant for good nothing.
That's right.
Well, you know what I'm saying?
That is was true. A moment with
hard
Ralph.
To argue.
It's an age-old saying.
That is hard to argue
Look,
with.
Just because I know the classics and you don't mock me.
Sure. Right. Yeah. That's the guy we turn to when we want to know what's going on in the world. Oh, Hollywood, here's Ralph Garber with the Showbiz Beat.
It is a celebrity showbiz roundtable these days with the big TV networks. One network drops a show, another one picks it up. It happened today. NBC had... struck its very successful TV show Medium from their fall schedule, and CBS turned around and picked it up today.
Really?
So it will continue on a brand new home on CBS, where it will air Friday nights after The Ghost Whisperer.
Hmm.
So it's a block of talking to ghosts, pretty much, for CBS. And, you know, the average viewer of CBS is so near death
that
they really appreciate the programming that involves talking to people who have passed over.
The other side.
Gives them hope.
But here's what I don't get.
God's waiting room watching
here's
CBS.
What I don't get, Ralph. Explain to me how TV works. If NBC can't make money, how do you move the same show over to CBS and it's successful for them?
Do
they renegotiate everything, maybe?
do it for less? I think that is the case, although I can't imagine they're going to be able to even produce it for much less than it's being produced over at NBC. Yeah. But, I don't know. CBS perhaps believes they'll have more success with it than NBC did, although, like I mentioned, it was a top 10 rated show for a long time.
Right.
So, I don't know. I don't understand what the upside is for CBS, but look, maybe a ghost told them to do it.
Yeah.
Shia LaBeouf loves his mom more than the average boy. He told Us Weekly magazine that she is the sexiest woman that he knows.
Oh.
And if he could meet her and marry her, he would.
Nope.
That's my mom, dude.
No. I think Shia's broken hand has led him just to not being able to release some sexual energy for some time. It's just getting crazy.
That's not.
He's just getting pent up. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What was that that hooker? Your mom was a hooker once, wasn't she, Kevin?
My mom was a hooker?
Yeah. Didn't you use her name as the name of a stripper or something? We're talking about some
story. I was trying to ad lib, and the only name that would come to my mind
was your mom.
My mom was... Yeah, that happened.
I think maybe you have a little Shia LaBeouf in you. I'd like got a little crush on mom. That's
I'd like
all
to think
saying.
Not.
Yeah, I'm sure you would like to. Speaking of crushes, Elizabeth Hurley hasn't been in any movies for 5 years.
Wow.
Why? Asked why she stopped working, she said the answer was her little boy, Damien. She says she loves making movies more than anything in the world except her son, and she loves being a full-time mom more, so she is not going to make any movies until her boy is in school. So, he's an little asshole keeping Elizabeth Hurley out of our Cineplexes, where she should
well,
be.
Well, you name a kid Damien, you don't expect good things out of him anyway.
Damien, you're the devil's son.
Little Omen reference from the 70s. That was my Gregory Peck. No one even knows who Gregory Peck is anymore.
Spinning the wheel. Going to the pimpin' chimp.
All right, we'll do the ants. We'll do the ants! Today's celebrity birthday is Mr. T celebrates his 57th birthday.
Gregory Peck talked like this.
Yes, he did.
Yeah. Faroussa Balk celebrates her 35th birthday. Lisa Edelstein of House is 41 years old. Richard Hatch from Battlestar Galactica celebrates his 64th birthday. I'm Ralph Garman, and I walk the showbiz beat.